Bus.
Good afternoon. I'm Ryan Baker. We've got a lot of day baseball in the Buckeye State. Right now over at Huntington Park, they're resuming their game that was suspended with Louisville last night in the eighth inning. That one tied at 3. They will play the scheduled game about 30 minutes after. The Ohio State baseball team with an elimination game in the Big Ten tournament today as they take on Rutgers at 2. You can listen to that on the Fan 2 starting at 1:55. The Cincinnati Reds playing the rubber match of their series with the Philadelphia Phillies at 1:05. Andrew Abbott battles Aaron Nolan. You can hear that on the Fans HD3 at 12:35. The Cleveland Guardians look to win their fifth straight when they face the Detroit Tigers at 6:40. Tanner Bibee gets the ball for the Guards. NBA's Western Conference Finals resume tonight as the Oklahoma City Thunder host the San Antonio Spurs at 8:30. This one brought to you by Germain Toyota. For unbeatable service and sales, visit Germain Toyota on the corner of I-70 and Bryce Road.
It's time to add some spice to your nooner. Nooner. Funny. This is the place where big-time guests, bold opinions, and little cute doggies come together. This is Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus, the number one rated windows and doors in Columbus.
All righty, here we go. Rothman and Ice on a wet and wild Wednesday. Anthony Rothman, Matty Ice Hayes, and the Loose Cannon. Boys, how we feeling?
What up? Feeling good, man. I am feeling good. Good to see you again. We missed you yesterday. Had JP in the building. Joshua Perry held it down for you. But yeah, all is well for me today, man. I hope everybody's having a nice start to their hump day. You feeling good today?
Feeling okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not good. Just okay.
Feeling okay.
Okay.
You know, I'm all right. Sometimes I need a day off from the day off.
Oh.
I think some people might understand what that means.
Okay.
All right. So the question on the table is this. How many people do you believe who were semi-interested in the Cavs game? Not hardcore Cav fan, but semi-interested, who also is a real working stiff that has to go to work and get up early, turn that game off with 7 to go, up 22, which, by the way, they gave you a great reason to shut her down.
No question.
The Cavs basically told you, hey, get a good night's sleep tonight. Yeah. We got this.
We'll see you in game 2.
Have great dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some erotic dreams, something. Oh. Like, we've given you a chance to have a wonderful night's sleep. We're up 22 on the road.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that we can do to blow this game. And you went to bed. So what is, if I put that on a poll today, like, do you think there's a pretty large percentage of people that went, that were interested in the game, number one, and turned it off and went to bed because the Cavs said you can?
I would have to imagine that's a pretty high percentage of
people.
Have
to be.
And I don't blame any of those people for saying, all right, I've seen enough. They're not going to lose this game. They're not losing this game, right? And so we get to the end of the game. And I thought to myself, what the hell just happened? What just happened? And so,
I'll tell you what had happened.
It was just an embarrassing outing by the Cleveland Cavaliers yesterday, to say the least. And there's so much to unpack, whether it's the coach, the players, whatever we want to do. But it was a historic thing that we all witnessed yesterday or this morning when you saw the highlights.
Not the LeBron witness.
No.
Okay.
What we witnessed last night, AR, was history, because in the final 7 minutes of that game, teams that were up 20-plus points usually in the final set of 7 minutes of a fourth-quarter playoff game were 643-0. Mm-hmm. That record is now 643-1, thanks to the New York Knicks and the Cleveland Cavaliers completely embarrassing themselves down the stretch. That's what happened. Yeah. Something that has never happened in the history of the sport happened last night. In embarrassing fashion.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
All right. So there are a couple things. And where my mind goes is that was the worst coaching I have seen probably in my lifetime. There are some others I could bring up. That is the worst. The absolute worst. There are three things that you have to either hold momentum, stop momentum, get it back. And those three things are this. Get a stop, score the basketball or call a timeout. They were 0-for-3. Couldn't stop anybody, couldn't score, and the coach decided to sit there and watch it the way I was watching it.
The defensive stuff didn't surprise me. That didn't surprise me. That's who they've been this entire playoff run. The worst-ranked defense of all playoff teams coming into that game yesterday was attached to the Cleveland Cavaliers. So that didn't surprise me. What you brought up about Kenny Atkinson losing his mind shocked me. Shocked me. I couldn't believe, AR, that a coach was witnessing his team completely just lose this game and let it slip away and decided to do absolutely nothing. Nothing. That can't happen.
I'm going to read you a text that I got from my cousin Neil, who's a massive Cavs fan. And he goes, imagine seeing a car wreck occur on your way to work. Imagine seeing that car engulfed in flames.
Yeah.
Imagine a person maybe being injured. Imagine someone just sitting there watching and not call 911. Exactly. That's what I think of when I consider Atkinson last night.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly accurate. I don't know how you guys do it. I don't know how you love this team. Not you guys, just in general, like Cavs fan. And I was going through this stuff from last night on a group text with some Cav fans, like hardcore Cav fans, and I was throwing out those stats you were throwing out. Somebody said in the fourth quarter the Knicks were like 22.5-1. And I'm thinking, boy, I think that sounds low with 7 minutes to go down 22. I can't even imagine. I thought it'd be more like 120-1 for them to come back. So that sounds low to me, and I did not look. And the fact that you threw out that stat, and then what was the other one? They were 0-for-277 when trailing by 22 or more in the fourth, like the Knicks.
Insane.
And then there was a guy who did a ladder bet. There was a bettor at MGM who had 775,000 in ladder bets on the Knicks and ended up winning all of them.
Come on.
Like literally all of them. And here's the other one. Imagine if you bet the Cavs before the game with the 6.5.
Mm.
And now you're up 28.5 points with 7 minutes to go. And you go to bed.
Mm-hmm. And you wake up to that.
Or you're watching it. And then, you know, where do underdogs go to die? Overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just lose by, if you're going to do that, just lose by one.
Correct.
And I say all that to say this. Merrill's shot was in the cylinder. And everything that happens last night is somewhat erased with a result. I'm not saying they would feel good about it. I'm just saying you go off that floor after blowing a 22-point lead and win it at the buzzer.
That feels good.
All is right. Because good. It's all about
the result,
especially in the playoffs. And Mike Breen, who's calling the game with his patented call, and I don't really blame him for this because of what that ball did.
Yeah.
Kind of go down and out. But here's his call.
Bang.
Three-pointer. In and out.
I heard.
It was half a bang.
All right, let's play it again. Half.
Merrill. Three-pointer. In and out.
Yeah. I heard it.
But in and out.
It was a BA.
But in and out.
The BA.
So you can hear when I actually push the right button.
There's an old umpire that used to umpire at Wrigley.
Tim Timmons.
Eric Gregg. No, not my boy Tim Timmons, but Eric Gregg. And he had a famous, like, and I'd go to Wrigley as a kid, and he'd be like, Matt, he'd be like, hey, he'd have the out sign like this on a play at the plate. He'd go out, and then he'd go, it would just be like all in one motion, like, safe.
Okay.
You're like, what are you doing?
I've never seen that.
Wait till we see it.
Merrill, three-pointer, in and out.
Give us a chance.
That probably would have been a double bang from Mike Breen, too. That's when you know he's really charged
bang,
up.
Bang, bang?
He hits you with a bang.
The bang, bang shrimp?
Yeah, which is phenomenal, by the way. I think, where is that from? There's a restaurant up in Polaris that has bang, bang shrimp.
Of course
they do. Bonefish grill. Good stuff there. But when it's a huge shot, which that would have been.
Wait till it rips the twine.
No, you got to be. He was on. I mean, the ball was halfway in
the net. So you're telling me he has to say bang as the ball is going through.
To me, we're...
It can't be like a half a second later.
I completely understand why he let that come out of his mouth. And I think it would have been a double bang. Like, that's one of the all-timer things that any announcer has ever cooked up was bang. Like, when he retires and all that stuff, like, he's going to be known for that.
What about the... Okay, so I don't know who said it first.
Bang! Bang!
There's your double
bang. But when... You guys may not remember this. You probably don't. When Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann were doing SportsCenter, Olbermann did a from way downtown bang. Olbermann did that. Now, he was mocking or mimicking probably a basketball just lingo. From way downtown bang. And he did that a lot on SportsCenter. And my mind tells me that was way before Breen was doing it.
I know Breen does all the home Knick games. So he's a part of that broadcast. He's been with them for a long, long time. I don't know who had it first.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
But I think it's...
That's a name I haven't heard for a long time.
That's good. That's good.
Maddie, there's an announcement. You know Vern Lundquist.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So in the 86 Masters, when Vern Lundquist was on 17 green calling Jack's birdie at 17 when he won it at age 46. He has, when Jack is raising the McGregor putter into the air, the response McGregor putter, he goes, "Yes, sir." Okay. And he's famous for it.
Mm-hmm.
Two holes earlier in the same round, a very, very, very good announcer who wound up getting canceled for a comment he made about LPGA players, Ben Wright, when Jack eagled 15, said two holes earlier, "Yes, sir." And Ben has never gotten credit for it. Vern gets it to this day.
Mm.
Yeah, because Ben went away and couldn't really defend it, and nobody, it wasn't worth defending anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And Vern Lundquist
said, "Thank you. I'll take that.
I'll take your comment and double down." So now we'll get into Atkinson next. We'll have Schefter bottom of the hour. Speaking of golf, Ben Kern, PGA Pro, low pro at the championship from Hickory Hills, jumping on at 1 o'clock. We'll have fun with him. We'll have Bob in studio at 2 o'clock. So the general will be here. We are off and running. You'll hear Atkinson's explanation for taking his timeouts and stuffing them in a sack. Rothman and Ice and the Fan.
The sound of Paul Keels calling a Buckeye game is erotic.
Oh, yes.
Your home of the Buckeyes, the Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Hey, what's up? It's Steve.
Bo Bishop and Dom Tiberi. Dom remembers when Bo was a young whippersnapper. And Bo remembers when Dom wasn't part ape.
And then Yolanda one time wanted to wax my knuckles.
Tuesdays with Tiberi.
Sponsored by Green & Sons.
Tuesdays at 10:30 on The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Scattered showers and storms on and off throughout the day today. Otherwise, mostly cloudy and breezy with temperatures getting into the upper 60s to low 70s. For tonight, we turn mostly cloudy overnight and breezy with lows in the upper 40s. And then Thursday is my pick of the week with mostly sunny skies, breezy winds, and highs in the low 70s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 weather impact forecast.
There's nothing Bo Bishop can't do well, except find competent co-hosts. Bishop and Friends.
Weekdays from 9 to noon.
The Fan.
You have to understand you're listening to Rothman and Ice 97.1 The Fan. It's indubitable.
Kenneth Neal Atkinson. I think that gel in his hair melted into his brain last night. He was just frozen. Wow. And to say you got a little unlucky? Unlucky? You were up 22. You know how much luck needs to go the other team's way?
The only thing that was unlucky was the Sam Merrill shot. That was it.
All right. Yes. In and out of the cylinder.
That was it.
From way downtown.
Three-pointer. In and out.
Oh, my gosh. Like, if Sam Merrill would have hit that shot coming off of the game that he had in game seven in the previous series, this dude would have started to turn himself into a Cleveland legend right before our eyes. In that building, too?
Equally deflating to the Knicks to spend all that energy to come back only to lose.
No question.
All right? So we'll get to Atkinson here in a second, but I will say this. If, and I've talked to a lot of Cavs fans last night and this morning, trust me, they're my friends, and they say they're cooked. And my comeback is this and simply this. for the same reason you're telling me they're cooked is the same reason they're not. And what I mean by that is because they blew a massive lead, which means they had a massive lead, which means they can play with this team. Now, if they are cooked mentally, if that is the case, then this will be the most fragile professional team in a long time. Because if you decide as a team professionally that you're going to lean into the narrative that you know is out there, like you know people are saying you're cooked. So now they have a chance to say, wait a minute, we're that fragile? Okay, we historically blew a game. It's one game and it was on the road. It wasn't even in our building. Like, I've seen this too many times. I'd be absolutely blown away if this team either got swept or was a gentleman's sweep. I actually would be.
I don't think mentally they're going to fold. They've shown me something throughout this run in the postseason, playing two series that have gone to seven games both times each, right? Opening matchup against Toronto, then you go up against Detroit. You have to go into their building for game seven after losing in game six, I think in embarrassing fashion, the way that they did at home. And they figured out a way to lock back in. And I have to imagine that's what we're going to see. My concern is, though, you had a game to where the Knicks offensively were not at their best.
For the first half, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Two for 19 on threes at half, I think.
There you go. Yeah. So for half the game, the Knicks could not knock down anything from beyond three. And you got a OG Anunoby, who's a key piece of what they do on both ends of the floor, that's banged up right now. He's not even at his best and probably won't be.
He lacks some confidence. He airballed a three.
Yeah.
Free throws were okay. By the way, this doesn't matter, but he walked on that baseline move.
I agree.
He definitely walked. They didn't call it. However, the thing was so unraveled at that point, it probably didn't matter.
Those are the things that are concerning for me, more so than the mentality, right? Because I think they can tap into some of the confidence that you're talking about. But the Harden thing on defense, I don't know how you fix that. I don't, because Mike Brown said it after the game, and we all saw it with our own eyes. Where's number one? Every time we're on offense, where is James Harden? We are going to hunt him down time and time again. And Brunson had an incredible fourth quarter. But he had 13, 15 points, something like that in the fourth. He had about 11 straight of those, and pretty much all of them were on James Harden. James Harden was the screener on pick and rolls 21 times in the fourth quarter in overtime alone. 21 times. And I don't think that Kenny Atkinson is going to pull him off the floor late. It was a question for me, even outside of the timeout stuff, where's Dean Wade? One of your bigger defenders in this situation. I understand it's James Harden, but when he's getting abused the way that he was, we got to try something else. Brunson was 8 of 10 versus Harden last night.
All right.
8 of 10.
I'm glad you brought it up, because that's a guy 6'2 that looked like Jordan last night.
Big body Brunson is what they call him.
4 inches shorter than Jordan. I'm here to tell you that dippity dude just melted into that dude's brain. Like it did. He saw his team imploding, and Atkinson, we're not asking you to go out there and defend or launch a three. Coach the team. You're not a fan.
And you know what else was a mistake by Kenny Atkinson? Late in this game, the star player for the Knicks is Jalen Brunson, as we all know.
Get it out of his hands.
That AR, and when he's on defense with five fouls, can we please try to hunt him down?
That would have been another way to bring him out.
I'm sitting there watching this and why is Kenny Atkinson not drawing something up to get after Brunson? So it wasn't even just the timeouts. It was other stuff, too, that was really embarrassing for the head coach.
I'll tell you the other thing, and I think I've already said this, I'll say it again. Like, Brunson, if I didn't know any better, and I always try to play this game because I already have these preconceived notions of Harden. We've already talked about him, what a liability he is in a lot of times.
Correct.
Now, he actually hit a big shot late that gave him the lead. And then, of course, Brunson came down and hit a high banker. And that led to the Cavs having they owned the last shot. Like, that was theirs. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know what it was by now.
Bah.
That's right. It was Bah.
Bah.
Bang! Bang!
Not that, unfortunately.
Merrill, three-pointer. Bah! In and out.
So, talk about these. Brunson, every shot he hit, most of them, maybe 90% in that run, was in the paint. All right. So, let's at least have some bigs try to rotate. And you know he should. Like, somebody needed to contest that. Because he was taking Harden off the dribble like he was a fifth grader. But the difference is, and if I didn't know, Harden contested every shot. Like, the shots weren't wide open. Now, he's incredible. The floaters, the timing, yeah. His ability to put that ball high off the window from any angle. You're right, he can get to the rack. But not one big decided to say, hey, we're watching this too. We're playing too. We know that Harden is one-on-one top of the key, and he's going to get crossed over somehow. Yeah. And nobody came to try to help.
I think sometimes they're going to get caught in some tough situations, that being Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, when you're dealing with Cat out there too, as a big that's out there on the three-point line spacing the floor. Yeah. So he's pulling those guys away in some certain situations. But Brunson, this is just who he's been for years now, since he's become a New York Knick. Like, times get tough for them, he can pull them out of a hole. Games are tight late, he can extend leads for them or create bigger gaps against the opposing team. And he's just calm, cool, and collected. You can't get him off his spot. He's going to get to where he wants to go, and he's skillful. When he's looking at a guy like James Harden in front of him, there's just no lack of confidence there. Like, his confidence is through the roof. So he's going to come down time and time again, call for his big to come, his teammate, switch off of his defender, and get Harden on him. And that's what happened down the stretch.
Yeah. Listen, does it feel like four losses in one? Of course it does. It'll last probably through the afternoon or until the next game tips off. And then you got to go play. Yeah. But what we watched last night, as bad as it was, the game was rescuable. Like, Mobley hit one of those threes. Like, somebody make a basket at the end in that run, in that 30-8 run. Because I've never seen everything go wrong for that long of time. Like, eventually you'll get a team that'll miss, or you'll make a basket. Like, something will happen, and nothing happened. And so the only thing that happened, honestly, was Harden's jumper at the end that gave him the lead with, like, 40 seconds to go or 30 seconds to go. But if Mobley makes one of those threes, they probably survive. If Strus did make a three, but it was way. By the way, he's got the getting the ball poked away in the half court. And the other thing with the Knicks is everyone was feeding off Brunson. Everybody, Bridges, Shamet, like, eventually
the crowd,
like, those guys. The crowd sucked at the beginning. By the way, that Cleveland crowd sounds 10 times louder than Madison Square Garden. And you know what happened? They gave him something to cheer about.
And it went.
They had it
crazy
dead.
In there after that.
Here's Atkinson, TLC, on why he had four timeouts in his pocket, knowing the two were going to disappear with a few minutes to go, and never felt the need to try to slow momentum.
Yeah, well, I like to hold my timeouts. I mean, I didn't want to have one timeout at the end of the game. One or two-point game, I try to hold them, you know.
I don't know.
That can't happen. That's not the rule.
Well, he knows two of them are going to disappear.
Correct.
That's unless the follow-up is, did you forget the rule?
Which I guess he did.
I'm telling you.
So to your point, for the folks that don't know, it's the use it or lose it rule.
Yeah.
You get to that 3-minute mark in the fourth quarter.
Two go poof.
And two gone.
So,
gone. And so what he's talking about carrying over timeouts.
When it goes from 20 to 15, is it like,
stop the bleeding.
Do something.
Do anything.
Like, even if it didn't matter.
Correct.
Because if you watch that game as closely as we watch that game, when the Cavs did call a timeout and they came out, like, things were good. They ran some good plays when they came out of a timeout. If anything, just try anything.
Yeah.
Like, do something to make us feel like you're not just a passenger, a fan watching this game with us.
And then
you're being paid to coach the team.
Correct. And then you're throwing out comments after the game about your trust in Harden as a defender.
Well,
and
that's the NBA star. I heard Wendy talking about that today. Like, in the NBA, it's unlike every other sport where the stars, you don't want to upset the universe and put a star on the bench.
I get, and I think that's maybe part of the reason why he didn't pull him out of the game in that spot, because he didn't want to start that in game one. But to me, after the game, don't just blatantly lie to us after what we saw Harden go through, and that you trust him as a defender. There's just no way. So Kenny Atkinson, from the coming out of halftime to the end of that game, that was one of the worst things I've ever seen from a head coach.
So it honestly was the perfect storm, because the Knicks made everything they put up and needed to make everything that they put up just to get it to overtime. Mm-hmm. Yes, was there a little bit at the end that maybe the Cavs could have rescued? Sure. But the fact that he was watching this tidal wave and he decided not to evacuate. Like, it was like some hurricane's coming. He's like, no, just lock the doors. We'll be fine.
And another question I have real quick before we get to Shefty is, where is Jalen Tyson at? Where is he at after the regular season he's had? Like, I got to go back and listen to Atkins' press conference after the game, but I'm just curious why some of these guys, especially like him, who we've seen throughout the regular season be a nice contributor to the team, can't get any run right now.
This is game one. This isn't game seven of a World Series. This isn't the drive, the fumble, the shot. This isn't that. But it feels pretty brutal. We'll come back with Shefty in 2 minutes. Rothman
and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door Showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
NFL Playbook with ESPN's Adam Schefter.
Sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
For all your roofing, siding, and gutter needs, contact the Roofing Guys at theroofingguys.com.
All right, let's welcome in the senior NFL insider for ESPN, the one and only Adam Schefter, is on the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Schefter, good afternoon, my man.
What is going on, Anthony? How you doing, my friend?
We're doing great. I want to ask you about the Rodgers situation. So I think we knew this was going to get here. We just had that feeling. He gets a 1 year. It's got some incentives in it. Are you aware of the details of those on trying to achieve that extra $2 or $3 million or whatever they put in as incentives?
Yeah, that's what it is. I don't think that's really overly significant, just in the sense that he's going to make $22-23 million in base guaranteed money. So, you know, if he could make a couple of extra $1 million, I would bet that there's a Super Bowl bonus in there, maybe a playoff bonus in there, along those lines. But he's going to make well over $20 million for the upcoming season, which is probably a fair number.
Do you, when you analyze this situation, and I know he was on McAfee and he talked about how he's had a great career, he's played 20 years, and this is a chance to finish up with feeling good about himself, his career in football, but is there that drive to win another Super Bowl? Does he think he can do it in Pittsburgh? Is that why he did this? Or is this just kind of comes to a natural conclusion of, hey, I still can do it. I want to play, and that's where I belong. I mean, do you feel like he believes that coming back this year could be something special, or is it just to kind of make peace with his career?
Well, I think a little bit of both. I think the biggest thing is that he felt appreciated, wanted in Pittsburgh last year in ways that other people, I mean, it just made him feel good. It was a good feeling. Like, it was a football environment, football-loving city. He really enjoyed it more than I think he thought he would. Because everybody, like, he had said that last year was going to be his last year. Why is he open to coming back? He's open to coming back because he loved being around those guys, that organization, that city. It really surprised him. I think it's the love of the camaraderie, the game, as much as anything else.
All right, Shefty. So yesterday, towards the end of our show, we got news out of Kansas City that involves Rashee Rice. So for the folks that didn't catch that news and aren't up to date on that, update us on that situation and everything that's happening with him now again.
Well, it's, where do we start with him?
Right.
It's a situation where there was a violation of his probation, and he was always going to have to go to jail for 30 days, somewhere in the next 5 years. That was part of the initial agreement. So he agreed to serve it now. I guess there was some violation where it was kind of ordered to do it now. But obviously it came as some surprise to him because he had knee surgery last week. Now, you don't have the knee surgery last week if you know you're going to jail the next week. So he's going to be in jail for 30 days at the time he should be rehabbing. That's not a great situation. Now, there was a violation. The judge that sentenced him is retiring. I guess the time had to be served now. So he's there, and he had the knee surgery. Like, just, it's a confluence of bad factors, just all coming together.
Yeah. Okay, so now because of this stuff, and maybe on Kansas City side, maybe there's a little uncertainty, lack of trust with him. Do you think that Kansas City is in-house thinking about calling over to Philadelphia and trying to acquire A.J. Brown?
No, I don't think that. I would not expect that to be the case. But, you know, I think that they have some receivers, some young receivers, and I think Philly's going to want to move off A.J. Brown. I still think New England Patriots are the likely destination. I don't think anything changes that despite any conversations. I mean, the Chiefs certainly can check in, but it's a lot of money, too. It's a lot of money. And it's going to be a lot of compensation. I just don't think the Chiefs would be willing to do that. That's my sense of things.
Listen, it would cost a lot of money, obviously. There's a lot there to that signing. But I don't think there's any argument that if that were to happen, if they were able to convince the Eagles to trade them Brown instead of dishing him to the Patriots, that then they become right back instant title contenders right away. So, I mean, I guess exploring the chances of landing him probably aren't crazy. Doesn't mean they have to do it, but would you anticipate that they may explore it?
I don't think it matters whether they explore it. I think the die is cast here. I do think he's going to...
So when it comes to Pat Mahomes and where he is right now with his rehab, Shefty, hit us maybe with a percentage chance of him being the guy week one. How close are we? Or not very close right now, I have to assume, but how is that going for him? Are they feeling like he's going to be ready to go week one, or is that going to take a little bit more time?
How about could it be both of those, where I think he's going to be out there week one because he's Pat Mahomes and because he's unbelievable like that, and he's a quick healer, but I also don't know that he's going to be Pat Mahomes right away, and it's going to take a little while to work back into form. You know, he tore his ACL and his LCL, both, just over 5 months ago. The season opener is just under 4 months away. And I just think that that's a significant knee injury. One of his superpowers is he can run around, elude tacklers, make things happen. I just don't know that he's going to be able to do that at full strength for a little while, if ever. Right? Like, we don't know how he's going to be compromised. We're used to seeing a superhuman quarterback, and he's still as good as anybody in the game. But I don't think that that injury should be underestimated. I think it's pretty significant. And like I said, I think he'll be back. I think he'll play in the opener. But I don't think you're going to see a guy running around, making things happen like that. And that changes his game a little bit.
Adam Schefter with us, senior NFL insider on ESPN. When the story came out that the Vikings were going to have an open competition between Kyler Murray and J.J. McCarthy, I think a lot of people kind of laughed because they thought, all right, they went out to get Kyler Murray because they believe he's better than McCarthy, and they got him at a very good rate, and he's got a lot more experience, and not like McCarthy has lit the world on fire anyway, and he's been injured, and he hasn't played very well. I look at it this way, like, what else should they say? Of course, because if you say anything definitive, it would probably be stupid, because A, you want McCarthy to believe that there's still something there, and they could probably want to put a little confidence out into the air about him and that they're not going to just, quote, give up on him. And then in the other way, it says to Kyler Murray that we didn't sign you just to gift you the job, that you still have to go out and earn it. Am I reading this correctly, or am I being naive?
You know, I just think it's a situation where they have to open it up. But I think back to Indianapolis last year, they opened up that competition for Daniel Jones when they brought him in to be with Anthony Richardson. Did anybody think that Richardson was going to win that job? And Jones did. It feels like everybody thinks Kyler is going to win this job. It just feels like they're going to call it an open competition and Kyler is going to be the one that emerges. I just don't think that JJ should be underestimated, but I think I'm in the minority there.
A guy that was a very, very good player years ago and a great fantasy player for all of us years ago, Shefty, was Alvin Kamara. He's now north of 30 years old. The Saints bring in Travis Etienne, and so there's some uncertainty about what's next for Kamara. And so what's your take on that right now? Do you feel like he's going to be a Saint or playing elsewhere in 2026?
There's something going on there because the way that Mickey Loomis, the Saints GM, spoke the other day, talked about asset allocation. Like, it was like GM speak for we can't pay him right now. So I think that's an issue first and foremost. And then, you know, they have Travis Etienne, who they signed from Jacksonville. He changed the pronunciation of his name. I'm not mispronouncing it. Not Travis Etienne anymore. It's Travis Etienne. So you know, he's going to be the workhorse, it seems like. I think there's a spot for Kamara. I think he's probably at his best with another back to share the work with. And I think he'd like to be there, but I'm still not convinced he will be.
And they can save some decent money if they decide to cut him. If they wait, I guess, until after June 1st, they could save a little more, but then the dead cap charge is there. So are there any landing spots that we should discuss if this were to happen?
I think there would be a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think, like, where would Alvin Kamara fit in? That would be an obvious one.
Mm-hmm. Would Dallas be in play, Shefty? Like, would Dallas take a swing at something like that?
I could see Dallas having some interest. That wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, that backs up Javonte, yeah.
I could see, just thinking here a second, Seattle. That would be interesting. I could see, just off the top of my head, Cincinnati. I could see, how about Detroit with Gibbs, or are they too similar? Yeah.
I think similar. I think you want to put him on a team that kind of has a workhorse, that like has like you put him on Baltimore, you put him on Green Bay, you put him on.
Those all make sense.
Backup Henry, backup Jacobs. Then you have a little thunder and lightning. All right, we'll keep on it, my man. Great stuff as always, and we appreciate you. We'll talk to you soon.
Guys, have a great week. Thank you for having me. We'll talk soon.
You got it. Adam Schefter on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fangist Hotline. I think we hit him something where, Matty, that he probably hadn't even thought of that part of it. Yeah. And maybe you and I have, because we're always into fantasy. And Alvin Kamara has been a fantasy stud for years. But the writing is on the wall for Alvin Kamara. And we will find a spot for him next. Rothman and Ice and the Fan.
We're the highest rated sports radio station in America. There's no joke there. We just are. The Fan. Ohio's sports destination.
There's an old story about our outcome.
How many different ways can you consume morning juice?
Let's see.
Live on YouTube, live on the Fan's HD3 podcast on demand, and on 10 TV+.
And we'll send Bobby right to your house.
Weekday mornings from 6 to 8.
The Fan. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Want to jinx your favorite sports team?
Please get out of my Van Halen t-shirt before you jinx the band and they break up.
Just ask Matty to print your shirts.
You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
The legend of Victor Wembanyama continues. The story is that he dribbled a basketball up a dangerous mountain range in 4.5 hours that would apparently take a normal human being about 8 hours to just walk up while training with monks. Quote, one day he told Wembanyama to dribble a basketball up another dangerous mountain route to some monastery deep in the Song Mountains of China. The hike traversed cliffside plank paths, suspension bridges, and ancient forests, and was 5 times as long as some cave I've never heard of. The trail forces you to climb roughly 2,500 feet in elevation across uneven ridges and stone. While still dribbling? Or did we lose the basketball at that point?
I think we're still dribbling.
That's focus.
Are you buying?
That ball just bounds down the mountain.
Are you buying that?
Guess the game is over. Little help?
You buying that he cut the time in half? Because I am. Him at 7'4", the amount of distance he's covering?
I know, but it's the uneven terrain. It's the, I don't want to fall off a mountain. It's that. I just watched... Okay. Greenland 2. You guys see the first one?
They've been on TV a lot recently.
Well, they have to go across some rickety suspension bridge and get from one side to another. Okay. And like, I'm not doing it. I'm just staying on this side. Whatever happens, happens. Like this guy's, I mean, he's got way too much to lose, but if he's got that kind of focus.
It's kind of like when when Tiger was growing up, right? And the stories about his dad, what, starting lawnmowers or playing music or yelling or whatever he was doing in Tiger's backswing, and it locked him in. So you got Wimby, you know, dribbling up a mountain or whatever it is. You know, that's a lot harder, obviously, than just dribbling it on some hardwood. So I kind of see the vision, and I buy that he did that. It is scary, though, like how dialed in that dude is to wanting to get better. Like, it's pretty crazy that he does that, but doing stuff with Hakeem Olajuwon, doing stuff with Kevin Garnett, like, he's got some type of mental stuff going on that's at a higher power than a lot of other basketball players, it seems, right now.
Mm.
And then on top of that, it helps that you're 7'4", and then just touched by the basketball guys with guard skills at that size.
I mean, how could Baby Chet even have a prayer?
He like was nowhere like, to be on. Found.
This guy's training with monks at elevation.
That's what I'm saying.
And the other guy is doing what? What did you do today to get better? I don't know. It sounds a little bit embellished, I would say.
Okay.
Like, I can understand maybe him going up into the elevation somehow with a guide or other people. But the dribbling of the basketball, like the whole time, that seems folklorish.
I'm buying. I'll say this, AR. Both game ones of the conference finals have been awesome.
Yeah.
Both of them delivered. Double OT and Spurs, Oklahoma City, game one, and then last night in New York.
Did he double dribble? Did he travel? Did a referee follow him up the mountain? LeBron would have finished the hike in 3 hours. All right, thank you.
And Jordan would have got it done in two.
Thank you for telling me that. And yes, definitely Jordan would have got it done in two. And he would have had two basketballs.
Oh, man. And a cigar. One for each hand. On the way up, too.
Oh, yeah. H-E double Annie.
Anything is possible, Aaron. That's what the streets tell
me. He's that good.
Anything is possible.
I'm seeing him getting tweets of, like, Bruce Lee and Batman. All right. I mean, that's pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that he's so great, I would want to believe stuff like this, that there's got to be some sort of crazy training regimen that would be involved in
this.
So this
is kind of like the
unicorn,
the Jordan flu game story, where it's kind of like now, it's like,
sick. We just don't know what he was sick from. That's all.
Wasn't what it originally was framed
as. It was from that poisoned pizza.
Just crazy.
Or whatever, right?
The Last Dance just shined a light on a lot of those stories that are now like,
I'm going to have to go back and listen to that, because if I'm Michael Jordan, I'm not accepting any outside food from a random dude. Like, I'm just not doing it. Like, it's too risky.
Yeah. You'd think.
Well, maybe back then, I don't know, nobody thought about that stuff.
I think about a lot of weird stuff like that. Like, this is sad to admit, but a show that I like is FBI. And in one of the shows,
is that with Queen Latifah?
No, I don't. Oh. I don't think that's her show.
But she did one of those.
You talk about like a 180/360 on your career.
Go pretty back. Awesome,
incredible work that she's put in music and in the film industry and on TV and all that stuff too. What was FBI?
Yeah.
There was an episode where there was this killer going around the city and putting poison in buffets everywhere, and it was just wiping out all these people. Mm. And so now every time I see a buffet, I think about that. It's kind of got like a Final Destination hold on me when it comes to driving behind trucks that have like the trees.
Some kind of swell dripping out of it or something. Yeah.
Like, it's weird how some things just stick with you. And one of those episodes at FBI sticks with me. And I don't know if I'll eat at a buffet ever again because of that.
I don't know if that's what you needed to hear to keep you away from a buffet. Like, I don't know if you needed to hear that story.
Some salad options.
I don't think you were. They do, but I don't know if the overall sneeze shield is going to do enough for you, Mr. Sanitizer. Like, I just don't see it being possible. That sounds like a good reason to stay away. But, hey, life's a gamble. You got to eat at a buffet every now and then.
Thank you.
You know what? Life's a gamble. Let's take it.
Absolutely. Norm, you get the fricassee? Yeah, it's good today. All right, top of the hour. I know we got to get to Kamara, but I want to welcome our friend Ben Kern on, the PGA low pro at the PGA Championship from Hickory Hills. So much to go over with him, and he'll be with us next. Rothman and Ice and the Fan.
Common man, a radio veteran, has a large hemorrhoid. Timmy Hall, a good, clean boy. Moonlight, says man's hemorrhoid. Common man and Timmy.
Weekdays at 3.
The Fan.
Get eco.net.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon. I'm Ryan Baker. The Cincinnati Reds about to play the rubber match of their series with the Philadelphia Phillies. Andrew Abbott battles Aaron Nola. You can hear that over on the Fans HD3 right now. The Cleveland Guardians look to win their fifth straight when they face the Detroit Tigers at 6:40 this evening. Tanner Bibee makes the start for the Guards. The Ohio State baseball team with an elimination game against Rutgers at the Big Ten tournament this afternoon at 2. You can listen to that over on the Fan 2 starting at 1:55. NBA's Western Conference Finals resuming tonight. The Oklahoma City Thunder hosting the San Antonio Spurs at 8:30. Western Conference Finals in the Stanley Cup playoffs begin tonight as Colorado hosts Vegas at 8. This one sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union, voted best credit union for the past 8 years in a row by CBUS Top Picks. Visit BMIFCU.org to learn more.
Anthony used to ski in his jeans? Are you serious? No, he's not from New Jersey. Back to Rothman and Ice.
Second hour of the program. Really looking forward to this. So, the PGA Championship was this week outside Philly. Thousands of PGA professionals try to do this, and then if they can make it, become the low club pro at a major. And this man has now done it twice. He had the most birdies in the field over the first two rounds, and when he's not lighting it up with the tour pros, he's running what I believe is one of the coolest layouts in Central Ohio, Hickory Hills Golf Club in Grove City. We welcome to the program Ben Kern. Ben, good to have you, man. Congrats.
I can't thank you enough. Appreciate it.
BK, you have a day job. Yes, it's in the golf industry, but your job isn't playing golf. How do you explain pulling this off?
Yeah, so I definitely got a day-to-day. I work at Hickory Hills. I'm the GM and director of golf here. It keeps me plenty busy. This place is up and growing. There's still plenty of opportunities for me to play golf, but I've been playing golf since I could walk. I was told that. My dad was a pro. He taught me essentially all the way through high school. I had aspirations of making the PGA Tour. I spent good 6 years chasing the mini tours after I finished up at Kansas State University. So I like to feel like I've got some game down there, whether it's always shining. No, but kind of when I gear up for these big events, obviously PGA Championship doesn't get any bigger. Mm-hmm. I put a little bit of time in and try to get the game back to as close to peak as possible. And I think definitely playing Bandon Dunes for our national championship a couple weeks prior, it was a pretty solid run of about a month of golf, so this was my cram session for the year.
Ben, do you feel like when you go into these that, because there's a double-edged sword, right? You want to be tournament tough, like you said. You want to have that a little bit of that feeling, like you really have something on the line before you go into this. And the other one would be low expectations, right? Golfers do that to themselves all the time. Like they go in and they don't try to set expectations because they don't want to put any added pressure on themselves. How did you approach the PGA Championship in that tightrope I'm talking about?
Yeah, that is a battle, to be completely honest with you. It's about having fun. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're not enjoying playing golf, I promise you, you're not going to shoot your best score. So it's a majority of it it's not having low expectations. It's just ensuring that you're not going out there going, I have to do this or I have to do that. It's a lot of, I get to play a PGA championship. I get to play a major and kind of let past results, past abilities shine.
So let's go from round one to round two. Round two, six birdies. It was incredible, Ben. But take us inside your mindset going from day one to day two and why you feel like you were able to flip the switch and put out a better product and have that awesome day.
Yeah, round one, a little bit of butterflies. I felt pretty comfortable. It's my third PGA championship. I'm not saying playing in three of them all of a sudden you're cozy and good to go out there, but I felt pretty good going into it. A few butterflies to start on the first tee, but I settled in pretty quick round one. I didn't play bad. I didn't play great. Posted a 4 over par, pretty darn respectable score at that place. But sitting there at 4 par going into Friday, I knew I had to play a little better Friday to have a chance for the weekend. And definitely after getting a taste of playing the weekend in a major in 2018, I really wanted another chance at the weekend. And I put a goal of, hey, I actually want to go out there and I can shoot a couple under par. I knew that I had to hit a lot more fairways. At that place, I don't know if you guys heard Aaron Rye, his whole goal was hitting fairways, and he could not have been more right. You could hit it 400 yards down there, but if you're in the rough, you're dead. So I prioritize. I've got to hit a lot more fairways, find the fat part of it, hit the proper tee shot, and I did that on Friday. And I've got a pretty solid iron game, hit a lot of greens, and my putter was hot, especially Friday.
That's what it takes. Ben Kern, low PGA pro at the PGA Championship this past week. Speaking of Friday, you went on that heater, birding 1, 2, and 3, and we all got notifications with the fire emoji. How did that feel going on that run?
That was fun. It just, once you kind of get in that groove and start making birdies out there, in that field on that golf course, the confidence comes back pretty quick, and I was able to kind of just snowball into what essentially that was probably one of my greatest rounds of golf I've ever played.
That's awesome. So coming out of that course, you were one of the bigger stories, but also we had the Garrick Higgo situation happen, as I'm sure you're well aware of. So being on the grounds there for that, what did you think of that whole situation? Had you ever seen that ever happen before?
I have heard of it happening before, but most of the time it's, hey, something's come up, a bathroom need or just something random, and that's kind of the case. But from everything I saw and watching the interview, I'm just perplexed at how that could possibly happen.
I think he fired his caddy, so maybe he's blaming him. I don't know. You get locked in, and I mean, your caddy is a member, correct? Your caddy PGA is a member at Hickory Hills.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine. I started playing golf with him right away when I got here, and kind of befriended him. He's on the board here. He's actually our club president at the time being. So I thought it'd be a unique and awesome situation for me to bring, hey, I'm coming out here as Team Hickory Hills, and we did that.
Nice. What do you put your caddy in charge of? Meaning like all those ancillary things that we talk about. What do you expect from your caddy when you show up on the property?
Number one, it's got to be the clubs are clean, the grips are good. Even that, this sounds silly, but minute dirt in the grooves, it can cause different spin rates and affect shots. It varies from week to week, especially with me. I'm not one that, I don't rely on my caddy very much, to be completely honest with you. When it comes to, hey, should it be a 7 or 6, or should it be low, or is this putt breaking left or right? So this week at Aronimink, I really saw the greens well. I was very comfortable reading them amongst myself. So on the greens, I was fully doing it. We talked through a lot of shots and holes in the practice rounds. Hey, this is where we want to be. Hey, this side of the fairway is just dead to us. We got to make sure we're airing right. So we did a lot of conversations, a lot of prep in the practice rounds to kind of get our game plan on the same page. And he was perfect. He really was perfect.
So more of the show up, keep up, shut up type of stuff.
Kind of.
Okay, I know.
But there's a lot more to it.
I know.
And then there's the last key part is even like Saturday, hey, I just made the weekend. Maybe I can do something special. I had a mindset of shooting a score, which is, for me, not the best way to do it. I kind of lost the fact of having fun. I wasn't in the greatest mindset. I held my head high and kept plugging, but we chatted down the fairways. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not out there venting like crazy, but it's nice to have someone I can just talk to, because it's hard to show emotion when you got 5,000 people around every single hole.
Yeah, that's real.
That's
great insight there. One thing I couldn't wait to ask you about, Ben, when I found out we were having you on, was something we talked about a few months ago that was kind of a fun debate here on the show, and it involves the former Buckeye and Neil Shipley, because he was participating in the TGL Golf League, and he had the hole-in-one, Ben, and we were saying, does that...
Well, explain where it was.
What was it? The virtual golf situation for TGL. Yeah. And so he had that hole in one. And we were having the conversation about, does that really count? Does that really count as a true hole in one? So we want to give you the floor Is that a true hole in one?
Man, you put me on the spot with that question. I guess so. I actually watched that live. It was pretty darn cool. Now that virtual golf is a big thing now, especially, I mean, I grew up in Arizona. That didn't exist. But now in Ohio, we have winners, a lot of people playing virtual golf. I'd almost just put it in, I would classify it as a hole in one, but it's almost in another category of virtual golf. So I've got, hey, I don't have any virtual golf hole in ones, but if you were to ask me, hey, I've got two, but I've made them in, I've got one real one and X amount in virtual golf. So I'd almost kind of put it in a separate category. But I still say, yes, it's a hole in one.
You're too nice, Ben. You're too nice. There is no way that you're, what are you putting in a virtual trophy case? But I understand where you're going with it, with sim golf being so big. All right. So I've seen over the years, you know, the Memorial has sponsor exemptions, right? We've had Bo Hogan. We've had Bob Sowards. We've had, I mean, even Gary Nicklaus played years ago. Am I being crazy here that you should be considered for a sponsor exemption into the Memorial?
I suppose not, but it's not something I'm going to chase. I mean, okay. I love this opportunity to play in the PGA Championship. I gave up the week in, week out grind back in 2012. I love playing golf. I love competing, and I love having a chance to win. But to do it often is not something I desire anymore, to be completely honest with you. So it's, would I accept it? I'm sure I would. But am I chasing that sponsor exemption? Yeah. No, I'm not.
I'll tell you got the best of all worlds, man. You get to do this. You get to grind a little bit to try to get in it, and then you show up and light the world on fire for a lot of amateurs and people that I know you're a pro, but to play amongst the world's greatest at a major and to do what you did, that's awesome. And I wish you a lot of luck and continue to have a lot of fun. And we'll check in on you at Hickory Hills and keep running that great place because it is a gem. So thanks for jumping on, BK. It really is.
You got it.
Thanks, pal. Talk soon.
See you.
Ben Kern, PGA Pro, who's the low pro at the PGA Championship. And for what that means is that all these club pros who try to qualify, he was the only one, Matty, I think, to make the cut. And then the fact that to do what he did on Friday, have those three birdies in a row, and then through two rounds, have the most birdies of anybody in the field. And I find it, now he did admit he goes and he plays these tournaments. It's not like he just jumps off the couch and slams the trunk and goes and plays. But I don't know any other sport. I know it's an individual sport. You know, no one's trying to block his shot or tackle him or anything like that. But I just don't know. Maybe a quarterback, like we saw it with Rivers briefly, playing with high school kids and show up in an NFL game and actually be able to play. It just seems like to be able to play with the world's best at a major and do what he did when he doesn't play regular golf. He has a day job.
It's incredible.
It's incredible. He doesn't hit 1,000 balls every day.
And then like, to your point, have round two go the way that it did. Not just go out there and have a, you know, birdie here, birdie there, few par. No, we're talking six birdies.
Shot 67.
At a major.
Yeah, at that place.
Incredible memory that he created there. And it's awesome stuff. I'm glad we had him on.
Well done, Ben. We appreciate your time. We'll come back with ins and outs. Rothman and Ice and the Fan.
Unlike your deadbeat uncle, we'll never leave you stranded in a ditch when you were six. This promo may have been a touch too specific. The Fan.
Hey, what's up? It's Tegan Paul.
The Fan has a secret radio station. It's called The Fan 2. You can listen to the Bob and Tom Show, Jim Rome, and Buckeye stuff. Why do they pay me big money to whisper? The Fan 2 is on The Fan's HD2 channel and streaming on The Fan app. You're welcome. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Scattered showers and storms on and off throughout the day today, otherwise mostly cloudy and breezy with temperatures getting into the upper 60s to low 70s. For tonight, we turn mostly cloudy overnight and breezy with lows in the upper 40s. And then Thursday is my pick of the week with mostly sunny skies, breezy winds, and highs in the low 70s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
If you haven't thought about Buckeye football today, I'm sorry to tell you that you're dead. Our condolences. Your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan. Rothman and Ice present In or Out.
Just a little of the old In and Out.
Maddie, are you in or out on my golf friends and a lot of them are club pros.
Gone.
Being jealous that we had Ben Kern on. Are you in or out on that? Because I'm getting a lot of texts right now.
Okay.
On the Krispy Kreme that I just performed here on the show. Are you in or out that they are jealous?
He's saying he glazed him is what he's saying.
Oh, okay. That's you get Krispy Kreme'd?
No, I'm asking
that. What, you want to start up?
I'm asking you, are you in or out? Yes, I'm getting a lot of donut gifts.
Jealousy just means they care. They care about you. They want to be a part of your show.
I said when one of
I'm in on it.
So this is what I
I'm
wrote back.
I'm in on them being jealous.
Okay, thank you. TLC, this is what I wrote back.
Okay.
I said, I guess I missed your other text on the one that said, hey, he was the only club pro to make the cut at the PGA, and he shot 67 Friday. Great interview. And then I wrote back, when one of you do that, I'll have you in studio.
There we go.
Whoa.
There we go. Let him know, Al. Ah, like the Cavs say, him know.
We're not discriminating. One of them do that, we'll have him in.
You'll be on.
Oh, they're upset that you chose him instead of them?
No, I think they were like, wow, there's a little heavy glaze going on right now. It's just more of a funny thing there.
Well,
but
I don't think they're seriously hurt about it. Yeah. Yeah. I thought the gong was that you have a show to talk to cool dudes and they don't.
Oh, no.
But we can gong that every day.
No, they don't care about that.
There's a new Drake and Kevin Durant Nike commercial that just came out, and Drake drops a quote in there. Let's normalize glazing the bros. Like showing your dude some love, showing your homie some love. Because, you know, now, like, that's the world we live in. You give anybody praise, anybody
all of a sudden,
oh, you're a glazer. Yeah, well, we don't do that enough. That's why I love showering you.
Wait, what? Did that get cut off?
Yeah, he probably did that on purpose. We don't do that enough. That's why I love showering you.
That's crazy.
Oh, my. Dude on dude stuff, man. That's wild. But hey, that's the world we live in. You can't do too much showing of love anymore.
What? Bad guys, let it go.
My guy's just texted. He goes, all right, it was a solid chat. He goes, I'm going to stop drinking and start practicing. Good advice.
Sound advice.
Whoa. My advice to you is start drinking heavily. By the way, another dadism. You've dropped two of my favorite dadisms today.
Sage advice?
My dad, yeah, always did. Right, but sage advice. And the other one he dropped today was like, we're done with a conversation, and TLC looks at me and goes, all right, well, at any rate. I'm like, man, my dad just said, oh, at any rate, let's move on.
That's a Mr. Rothmanism.
Yeah. All right, ins or outs?
In conclusion, are you in or out on being a better sleeper when it's storming?
Raining, not storming, because you don't want to hear the thunder and lightning. There's a calming effect to it, but I think the rain is better than being awakened by a storm.
I'm absolutely in on this. I go to sleep to rain sounds every single night now.
But what if I just gave you a sound machine that, like, a lot of cracking of a lot of thunder?
And, yeah, I don't need that.
Yeah,
I just need the rain. That's what I do. Yeah, so I fire up the iPad AR. Go to that 24-hour, whatever YouTube channel I found where it's like a 24-hour cycle of just rain. And it's the best thing ever. I just started doing this about a year ago. And now,
making it rain?
Now, well,
that's what you did about
I've done
year?
That a few
when
times.
When did you start that?
I've done that a few times. But now I can't sleep if I don't have my sleep sounds. Okay. And it's just rain. So it's calming for me. Okay. It's soothing.
What other sounds does that machine have?
Well, you know. You're a YouTube guy. You can find anything on YouTube. You know, you're in those deep, dark realms of YouTube. What's going on over there?
Bet you would, Rothman.
He'll join us at 2 o'clock.
We have all kinds of sound effects it could be. Are you in or out on benching professional athletes for mental errors? I'll give you the example. So last week, when the Giants were playing the Dodgers in L.A., Willy Adames, their starting shortstop, was on second base. I'll give you the setting and then you tell me what should happen. I used to be a baseball coach. All right. First and second and one out, and it's a fly ball to center field. What does the runner on second do?
Tag the third.
The thing about that is, in between pitches, Willy Adames was joking around with Mookie Betts, who was playing shortstop for the Dodgers. So Willy Adames is on second base. He's got his leadoff, so Mookie Betts is right behind him. And you can, you know, every baseball stadium, the camera is back in center field, zoomed in on home plate.
Yeah.
So you can see on the camera the runner on second base getting his leadoff. And so you can see Willy Adames literally turning around to mess with Mookie Betts. Mm-hmm. And then it's a fly ball to center field with only one out. So, you know, be mindful of that. And Willy Adames just starts rounding third, heading for home, and gets doubled up at second base. And Giants fans wanted him benched immediately.
All right, so there's a lot there, right? Because I'm all about, I'm okay with aggressive mistakes. It happens. That's part of the game. I'm also okay with one mental error. It happens. You brought a whole nother equation in where you kind of distracted yourself and you weren't focused. And that goes to being a professional. We're in the game and you got to lock in. There's a lot of that. I would bench someone 100% for lack of effort. 100%. I'm in that mindset. Mental errors, if they're multiple and they just don't have it that day, if they're just paralysis by overanalysis and they just make a lot of mental errors, then they may have to sit down a game, but it would be more to just protect them from themselves. But for me, it's loafing, you're done. I can't stand that.
What about mental loafing?
That's what I'm saying. You brought something into the equation. That's because you're saying he kind of was distracted.
He hung around with the other team.
Yeah, he was screwing around and then forgot how many outs there were.
Well, there's a third base coach that he probably looked at, so we knew how many. I mean, he should know, right? You'd say he forgot or didn't.
I mean, he probably
look at the third base
when
coach.
When he got the third base, he probably found out.
I mean, probably what's the third base coach doing?
It's probably not even on the third base coach, honestly. That's on the player. You got to know time and situation.
Well, what is the third base coach doing when he sees him? Probably, racing towards him.
Probably watching the fly ball.
Go back.
Yeah, probably. Like, what are you doing over
there? Yeah, it's like, wait a minute. Why are you standing on third base right now?
I mean, they just don't bench somebody for one bad mental error.
And that becomes a slippery slope, too, especially because he's one of their star players. And so if you do that once as a coach, is it something that guys are going to look at you like, well, hey, he just did that and you didn't pull him out of the game? And so I don't know if you want to go down that road right now, this early in the season. What I would be okay with is behind the scenes say, okay, if we're going to make these mistakes as players, me as the manager, it's a $1,000 fine. $1,000 fine. If we're going to do that stuff, let's keep it in-house for as long as we can. And if this becomes a thing time and time again publicly, then me as a coach, then maybe I need to play that card as well. And not embarrass you publicly, but call you out via the media or pull you from the game. Then I'll do it that way. But I think at this stage of the season, it's a $1,000 fine. I wouldn't be mad if a manager wanted to approach it that way, TLC.
All right, it's National Be a Millionaire Day. Wouldn't that be nice? If you were to sign a $1 million contract right here, right now, would you be in or out on immediately doing a dream purchase of some extravagant kind? Or would you kind of wait on that? Let the money hit your bank account a few times every couple weeks before you're comfortable enough. Or are you like, hey, I just signed the dotted line. The money's coming.
So are you saying this is a lump sum of $1 million or we're getting payments that add up to $1 million?
A $1 million per year contract that hits every 2 weeks.
I don't think I'd be that comfortable making an extravagant purchase that way, AR. For $1 million, I guess I could get a car and I'd be fine.
Yeah, it's all relative.
I get the car, so I would.
Really just depends. Yeah. I mean, it's the extravagant purchase, what he's talking about, is something that will not hold its value.
Right.
Or perhaps you, I don't know, you do like what the rookies do in the NFL, and you have like a $30,000 dinner with all of your best friends. You could do that. However you want to celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I get the car. I think I'd be good with that. And then I'd chill out after that.
I would do what you're talking about. I would get who's ever in the circle of trust, and we would plan a weekend or a week or wherever, and it's on me, and we're all going to Vegas or wherever. Not bachelor party stuff. I'm just talking about going to play golf, a lot of good dinners, and like you said, drop 40, 50 grand,
okay,
and then have those memories versus just one item.
Looking out for the homies, huh? I like that.
Well, I'm going to follow your rule. If they haven't talked to him in 90 days, they're not in.
Can't go.
Yeah.
By the way, if I'm a first-round draft pick in the NFL, there is no way I'm putting up with everybody just, hey, we're all going out to dinner, it's all on you. I'd be like, I got drafted to replace you. I'm not covering your tab for $30,000. No way.
I got drafted to replace you. You would say that to one of your teammates.
If I were a first-round pick. Now, if I were a fifth-round pick, probably not. If I were a first-round pick.
I don't think you would do that.
And I'm like, you're just going to run up the bill irresponsibly on me?
You got to play the game. You got to play the game. You well, know coming in.
I asked Bobby that about rookie dinners and whether they were fair, and he said, within reason, they're fair.
You got to play the game.
They'll take care of you later on, but I wouldn't have the foresight to be like, oh, like they'll take care of me next time.
Speaking of a first-round pick, he is now hyping this team again. Is it appropriate? You'll hear it next. Rothman is
for you.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Anthony finally hit a hole-in-one. So now what? Just bask in the glory?
And that's how she wrote.
You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
All right, as much as my co-host Matty Ice has already fast-forwarded past this NFL season for the Browns and Bengals, and we're on to 2027, I do feel like there's interest here. And my mind goes to, well, they can't be worse defensively. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I just feel like Cincinnati has done some things here. They've added, certainly had the big piece in Dexter Lawrence. And
year two for Al Golden, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like that you brought up the new pieces he has to work with, but him as a play caller, too, just to be settled in and know some of the guys that were around last year, know what they do well, what they don't do well, and then the additions. I think just having him around and you're not changing a whole new system and all that, I think will work in their favor as well. So I'm with you. There's a feel right now to me as well that this defense is going to be better. What type of leaps will they make? We shall see. We'll see. But I'd be shocked if it's worse than what it was last year, because honestly, last year, in the last couple of years prior to that, it's been pretty embarrassing. The amount of big plays and points that they've given up consistently to teams that aren't even like the elite teams that we're talking about. Like, we're talking about teams like the Jets and some of these other teams that have come into Cincinnati or hosted Cincinnati that have allowed that have had their offense pop off against that unit. And so they take care of that, AR, then this team's ceiling is really high.
A little surprised they spent three picks on defense. That was it. You and I thought they'd go just predominantly defense in the draft, but maybe after getting Dexter Lawrence, you feel like
I think that's what it is. Heavy. It connects to their free agency as well with Cook and Mafe and Jonathan Allen, and so I think there was a healthy balance between free agency and the draft of them bringing in some new faces, some new energy that can hopefully get that thing rolling.
So Joe Burrow, when did he speak?
So he's at today. This was about a half hour ago. Their OTAs are rolling. So Browns, Bengals, some other teams around the league are doing their stuff. And so these guys are meeting with the media. And so Joe Burrow had his press conference, I believe, right around 1 o'clock and had some interesting things to say.
I mean, you saw what this roster looked like in 2021, albeit you were young, but that was a Super Bowl roster. Do you think what you see right now from this organization and in that locker room is a Super Bowl roster?
I think this is the most talented roster that we've had since I've been here.
47 away. 48 from breaking.
Doable.
What was that last part? Something about, and then he said doable?
40.
Throwing 48 touchdowns to beat some record.
Okay.
Is that like the franchise record probably, maybe, or something like that? But the front end of that, AR, he's liking what he's seeing.
All-time franchise record.
It's 48 or 47? 48. Oh, he's 48 touchdowns away from that. Is what you're saying.
That's my interpretation.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Ken Anderson? Who? Yeah. Gotta be, right?
That's probably it.
It's gotta be a career record.
All right.
I think.
Well, they haven't been involved in this bracket.
3 years.
Like, it's
three seasons in a row.
Unthinkable.
Yeah.
The fact that they haven't been a contender that much following their Super Bowl run. Now, a lot of it is injury, specifically to him.
There it is. Yep.
And I get they have one of the worst defenses. Like, he can only do so much. You take him off the field,
and then you're asking.
It's one of the worst teams in the league.
Correct. Because then they had to ask things of Jake Browning and Joe Flacco. And then you're putting those guys in situations to where
Browning's girlfriend, fiance, and the old and the jumpsuits and all that or whatever.
Jumpsuits were fire, though. Yeah. I didn't like those. But Jake Browning, you're asking him to get into a situation where it's too many shot attempts for a quarterback like that. Your backup comes in. You want to limit what he has to do. Hopefully, you got a good run game that can pair with it. But when you start stacking up start after start after start for guys like that, they're going to get exposed, and he did. And then you hand the keys over to an old guy and Flacco, and he's going to peak and valley with his play. While the peaks are really, really high, some of the valleys are low. Yeah. And that being attached to what the defense was just a bad mix of everything. So you're so right to bring up the availability part of this for number nine. If he's there weeks 1 through 18 of the regular season schedule, then you're talking about a team that is no doubt going to have a chance against anybody in this league because of him. Now, the other side of that, too, has been you have that chance, but you also have a chance to lose to anybody because you leave the door open for everyone. And so you're bringing a guy like Dexter Lawrence, you're bringing a guy like Boye Mafe, and hopefully those guys up front can be closers and get home late, because that's what this has all been about to me as well, is you got this high-powered offense that hasn't been paired well with a consistent pass rush up front outside of Trey Hendrickson over the years. And so if they can do that and close out games, then you've got – the connective part of one unit connecting with the other and putting a team in a bind.
They strengthened their biggest weakness against the run by getting Dexter. Like, they decided in a great way that we have one of the better quarterbacks in the league. We've got the weapons you talk about and the fact that they can score with anybody.
Anybody.
And if we can stop the run or slow it down a little bit, then there's reason for hype. There's reason for him to believe this. Then you add the fact that they're playing a schedule that is, now they're in the division. They're, you know, you're going to get your Ravens twice, but the Browns and Steelers, I mean, they should be able to hang with those teams and beat those teams. Yeah. And if they get off to a good start this year, and that's the big if, because they usually don't, but if they do this year, then they're going to be instant contenders. Instant.
Their bye is what, week five? Week six?
Okay. Yeah, six. So it's early, but it's nice that they come out of the bye week playing a really good team on rest.
Yeah.
Like, I like that. I like the fact that they're coming out of their bye week at Baltimore. Like, it gives them 2 weeks to prepare for a division rival on the road. Like, so I do like that. But getting Tampa and at Houston, you had some stats earlier today about how Vegas is looking at their team. Right?
I have the stats.
TLC has it.
That's because Matty Ice didn't want to cheat. And so I have the point spread for every single Bengals game. Obviously, a 17-game schedule. So let's just start here, and I guess I'll get all the theme music ready to go. How many games are the Bengals favored out of 17?
I'm going to look at their schedule right now.
I wanted a gimme, to be honest, out of the gate, because my question was going to be, what is the line for that Kansas City game late in the year at home?
I think they'll be favored.
Both quarterbacks should be, or hopefully will be, healthy and available by then. Mahomes should be well in the clear of recovering from his injury. But
I look at their schedule, and the only two that are giving me there are two that are giving me pause. And one I just talked about.
At Houston?
Well, yeah, a little bit. And
at
then
Baltimore?
The one coming out of the bye week.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one where I doubt they'd be favored. Like, I can't have them favored in that game. I wouldn't. And
probably
this is all not. This is all based on lookout lines. We know nothing of what the teams, how they're going to be playing at this point, or who's going to be healthy. But everything else, at Washington, that's a little interesting. Yeah. Could I see that being Washington by a point and a half or two? I could. I could. Probably not. Cleveland, they should be favored. Kansas City at home, I still think, even if they were a 1 or 1.5 point favorite, that'd be fine.
So of the 17, I'm leaning towards like 13.
Oh, I'm
14.
I'm more than that. You're saying 13 of the 7? There's four.
I'm leaning 14.
Well, the only ones I can imagine would be Houston. I don't really want to say Pittsburgh in that early one. Pittsburgh will be a home dog in that one. So to me, it's Houston, at Baltimore, potentially at Washington. I would say.
See, my potentially is more Carolina than it is Washington.
At Carolina. Okay. So you're going four.
But it should probably, I'm probably at 15 then.
So you're saying three or four?
three.
I need final answers from both of you.
So not Kansas City.
You
know how much I like him this year, bouncing back.
Mm-hmm. Are you at two?
I feel like it's Houston and Baltimore early in the year, both on the road in the first 7 weeks. But your pick, your Carolina. See, here's the problem. Trying to project these look-aheads in week 15 just on paper. Like, on paper, I think Cincinnati's a better team than Carolina. I think they are. So I'm going to go just on. I have to predict this on paper.
No, I got
can't.
You. Yeah,
so I'm going to go two with at Houston, at Baltimore, potentially at Washington on a Monday night.
Yeah.
But I'll stay with two.
I'll go three.
Rock me on the dance.
Two for two, by the way.
Those are the two.
Those are the two. And you also nailed it. It's a 1.5 point spread favorite over Kansas City.
What about Washington and Carolina?
1.5 Washington, 2.5 Carolina.
So they're so both close.
Yeah, they're right
there. Favored.
They're both. Wow.
What's the Kansas City line?
1.5 for the Bengals.
Thanks.
Wow. It does. All right.
Real quick, I want to say this because he mentioned that being Joey B, that he thinks this is the best roster that they've had since he came in. It's interesting how it mirrors what they did in free agency. Mm-hmm. That cycle was Chidobe Awuzie, Mike Hilton, and then Trey Hendrickson. And you look at this year's cycle, and it's Dexter Lawrence and Mafe and Allen and Brian Cook. And so they went aggressive that all season on defense and led to a Super Bowl appearance. We'll see if they can cook up that same magic this year.
They start 3-0 this year. It's on.
Oh, yeah, it'll be loud.
Yeah. All right, we're coming back with a Buckeye Bulletin. Is a 2014 playoff actually good for Ohio State? We'll tackle that next. Rothman and Ice and the Fan.
Big Voice Guy here to remind you that you're listening to The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Okay, thanks. I have three more seconds. Bye-bye.
Care Heating and Court Easy.
Bishop and Friends.
So a bubble pops up in the text chain and it just goes, I've called the cops on myself. They're going to clear it out. And they did. So two police officers came in here.
Bishop and Friends, sponsored by Diamond Seller.
Weekdays from 9 to noon on The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Patriot Air Comfort Systems and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan.
Rothman and Ice present Buckeye Bulletin.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Save up to 50% on new windows from windownation.com.
All right, so this popped up. We've been talking about this potential 2014 playoff for a while. And I was telling you for weeks that the coaches are secretly in favor of this. They really are. It allows them a chance to feel like they could lose a game or two. It allows them a chance to manage their roster the way they'd want to.
You're absolutely right. And potentially more money for these guys, right? Like bonuses and all that stuff that are in some of these contracts. You get into the playoff, you get, I don't know, $250,000 or $500,000 or whatever it may be. I think you're absolutely correct, AR, in viewing it that way from their lens, is that the more opportunity I have to get to the playoff, why would I not want that? Why would I not want a couple more get out of jail free cards if I can afford them? Sure. All the coaches are going to be in on this.
The administration, all they want is, would this be better for us financially in the long run? That's what they want. And so the conferences are probably sitting around thinking, all right, how do we replace, you know, $250 million in, if they cancel our conference championship games, is that worth it? Because I think the real point in all of this is that we believe that somebody's going to pay for this. Like, somebody's going to want this. And you got to ask yourself, like, if Fox wants in on the college football playoff for the first time and ESPN wants to keep the tournament to itself, then it's one of those things where, all right, now you got to go back to both these networks and either ask them to bid against each other. And so I'm just a little worried that the amount of money, I mean, when you guys think about this, 3 years ago when the college football playoffs entire rights came up, Fox didn't even bid. Like, no one except ESPN did. They paid over $1 billion to re-up this thing through 2032. And now everyone thinks there's going to be a bidding war. For what? Games 9 through 24? Is that better for a network? You and I have both talked about this. Like, you could bring more teams in, but less teams are going to be technically competing as a contender. And the networks might say, fine, additional games. That sounds like more money. But it also sounds like a lot less ratings.
I think it's one of those situations, right? From a business perspective, you take those games and figure out the rest later. Like, especially when you're talking about some of the competitors, right? ESPN, Fox, CBS Sports, whatever, NBC, whatever it may be.
WNBC.
You don't want those networks to have all of it. If you can get in, you absolutely get in and hope that you get some good matchups that'll bring people to the table. But I think if you and I are running the network, AR, we're not just saying absolutely no to that. We're going to put in, I think, a good bid for it, hope we get it, and hope we pop a couple big numbers.
WNBC.
So the NFL could opt out of their current TV contracts early in 2029, I'm seeing. So Fox is a $25 billion corporation, and they currently pay $2 billion for the NFL rights. But you guys know where this is headed. This is a future that's trying to get these streaming giants like Google and Amazon to keep coming aboard. And Fox is there going, hey, we need to crack down on all the streaming platforms, right? Because we're paying billions. And so is it possible that Fox might say, all right, we're heading down a weird road in the NFL. Let's try to get a little more into college football. And is Fox going to kind of conserve and say, all right, let's conserve it all for 2029. Why spend it on first round college football playoff games? Like, it sounds okay. More games equals more money. But not necessarily when you're paying the amount that they're paying. And if the ratings don't follow, when 9 is playing 24 and 10 is playing 23. And
that's just the unknown, right? Out of the gate. Like, you'll never know what those matchups are going to look like when you're buying this product out of the gate. And so how invested should you be in that, AR?
Well, if you're not getting enough high-end games, look at what they're not getting in the Big Ten right now. They're not getting a lot of high-end games. Like, they aired three games this year with at least 10 million viewers last season. Only two others topped 5 million. Like, they are definitely riding the wave on Ohio State, Michigan to some degree, Oregon to some degree. Yep. And then it just kind of falls off a cliff.
Yeah.
So you're asking them. Now, what they hope is that by expanding the playoff to 24, these programs like Ohio State, that they'll be like, okay, now we can schedule some really tough non-conference games because the consequence isn't as bad if we lose.
And I don't know exactly where this is going to head as far as the number, because you got Tony Petitti, commissioner of the Big Ten, coming out and saying, absolutely not. We're not on board with 16 teams. We want 24. On the SEC side of things, it sounds like they want to switch around and go to the 16-team situation. That's what they prefer. And so those two conferences, which are the power conferences of the sport right now, especially college football, are not on the same page with this. I feel better about 16 than I do 24. Mm-hmm. But we've already had conversations, and it's been elsewhere, about go ahead.
I was going to stop you real fast. The reason that they don't want a 16-teamer and they want 24 is for exactly what I'm saying. The 16 doesn't work economically. Like, it just doesn't. Like, they need more. For what I said, when they're losing on ratings with 75% of the conference, those games not drawing the numbers the way they should or what they're paying for. So, of course, the Big Ten and the ACC and the Big 12 and maybe even Notre Dame are like, yeah, let's go to 24. Someone else is paying for it. Well, that's not a guarantee just yet.
Notre Dame's like, can we keep the rule that we have now every year? That top, if we're just protected in the top 12, we're automatically.
I mean, ESPN wants it to stay at 12. But certainly no more than 16. Because of what I'm saying, which is, we don't know whether these first-round games are going to produce numbers. Now, it could produce some matchups that we haven't seen in a while, and they may be fun for those fan bases. Yeah. But what I'm telling you, will there be emotional investment from the average fan to watch those games the way they watched the NCAA, watch March Madness.
When you say those games, like what programs are you thinking of? Are you thinking of the James Madisons, the SMUs, the like those type of programs that aren't going to move the needle? Because I agree with you when it comes to those teams.
BYU versus Houston.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's
Virginia versus Utah. Like, you know, I'm
right.
Those like, I exist in this world.
But it's dressed up as the college football playoff.
That matters.
Correct.
That it matters. That there's something there that matters.
Even though the four teams that you mentioned, I'd probably be sitting back and thinking, these teams ain't winning the national championship this year. Why are they
the
here?
Only teams interested in watching those are the people that go to those schools, went to those schools.
Or bet or on the game.
Or, yes, and there's a fourth one. Or the team that has to play them next.
Next.
Those people will be watching. I've been watching gas prices go up, but your fuel costs don't have to. All right. Jermaine Honda of Dublin. Right now, you can drive smarter with a fuel-efficient. Check out the Civic, the Accord, the CR-V Hybrid. You're going to go farther on every tank. You're going to keep more money in your pocket. And here's the best part. Great lease and finance rates are available right now for qualified buyers. So when you think about if you're planning that summer road trip, and you want to get a vehicle that you can rely upon, but it's going to get you really great fuel mileage, go to Jermaine Honda of Dublin. Go to the website now, jermainehondaofdublin.com, and check them out. And you can do that in person. They're on 270, off of 270, just south of 270 on Sawmill Road. Or, of course, shop anytime at jermainehondaofdublin.com. We come back top of the hour with our guy Bobby Carpenter, and we'll ask him, is it good for college football if they go to 24? Rothman and Ice and the Fan.
The radio couldn't contain us, so we've taken over YouTube. Catch Morning Juice weekday mornings at 6 by searching 971 The Fan. Do it.
Veterans and act.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Ryan Baker. Earlier today over at Huntington Park, the Columbus Clippers resumed their game with the Louisville Bats that was suspended last night, and the Clippers won that 7-5. They're playing their scheduled game right now, and it's scoreless in the third. The Cincinnati Reds playing the rubber match of their series with the Philadelphia Phillies over in Philly. They're in the bottom of the third, and the Reds lead that one 3-1. The Cleveland Guardians looking to win their fifth straight tonight when they face the Detroit Tigers at 6:40. Tanner Bight gets the ball for the Guards. Ohio State's baseball team starting their elimination game with Rutgers over at the Big Ten tournament out in Omaha right now. You can listen to that one over on The Fan 2. NBA's Western Conference Finals resume tonight as Oklahoma City hosts San Antonio at 8:30. Western Conference Finals in the Stanley Cup playoffs begin tonight as Colorado hosting Vegas at 8.
Most shows just skim the surface, but Rothman and Ice feel like the biggest story of the day deserves a closer look. It's time for A Deeper Dive.
Sponsored by Orthopedic One, Central Ohio's most trusted orthopedic practice. Find a physician or location near you at orthopedicone.com.
All right, back at it. Final hour of the program with our guy, Bobby Carpenter, who used to always tell, when the world slips you a Jeffrey, stroke the furry wall. And he's with us now. How are you feeling?
Feeling good. I will say this. I love our guy, the drop king over there.
I already know what this is about.
Walking into the NFL locker room. I'm here to take your job.
I think his quote was, I was drafted to replace you.
Yeah. I mean, guys have tried that. It doesn't end very well for any of them.
All right. For the people that play. For the people that were just joining us, set up the premise of the argument.
So we were talking about rookie dinners.
That's right.
And he brought up, like, in that rookie dinner thing, I'm not going. Because you guys, what would you do if you had got your $1 million contract? And honestly, you're like, I'm going to buy experiences. Yep. Car, that's right. Whatever. We can deal with that. But
memories.
Yeah. I'm going to do something that I've always wanted to do that I never was able to before. And you know, I'm going to take care of everybody doing it. So, like, whether it's a dinner, a trip, or whatever. And so then Cole jumps in, like, yeah, and that's another thing, is rookie dinners. You just get that contract. I'm not doing that. They drafted me to replace you.
It's crazy.
Now, he set
the crazy line.
As soon as I said that, I'm like, I know Bobby's listening. I know he hates this.
But did you say because you were a first rounder? Like, there were certain rounds you couldn't say it.
If I were a fifth rounder,
I wouldn't say it.
I wouldn't say it.
I'm going to tell you this. When I got there, to Dallas, and any other guy that will tell you, like, there's a reason Sonny Styles isn't saying that in Washington, because it's not going to endear you to anybody. So if you want an uphill battle the whole time, and I tell this story, and this was by a guy that was drafted a little bit later, and I'll keep his name out of it because he's actually a fairly prominent coach now. But they said they were going to shave all the DB's heads in Dallas. And he had long dreads he'd been working on. And they went to all the rooms. And one of his other teammates, like the guy who he played with in college, was drafted there with him. And they came in. He unlocks the door. And he's like, all right, you know, sits on the bed. And they get the clippers out. It's kind of like Colin Jost on the deal. They had them all done on Saturday Night Live. And then he pulls off and they stop. Well, the one guy locks the door, won't let him in, like, let us in, whatever. And they're like, we're just going to wait here all night. He actually tells the coaches about it. And the coaches address it. And the thing was, they didn't shave anybody's head. But then when they went in, they're like, don't tell anybody else. It's just a function of, are you going to sit here and be a part of this? Mm-hmm. And you know what they did to him out on the field in the preseason? They'd make checks and calls, and they wouldn't tell him a thing.
Oh.
And they would turn to him, because there's no audio on the film. So they would make signs to each other, and guys are talking. He's like, what's the call? And they turn and nod their head when they were looking, like they were talking to him, and then he doesn't know what to do. And so then you go to film the next day, and he's getting yelled at, and he's like, no one's telling me. He goes, no, coach, right there, look, he just couldn't hear, he just wasn't listening. He's like, I'm telling
that's
him right there.
Brutal.
Yeah, you don't think these guys have been through it before? Bro, they'll take your car, you'll come out, it'll be on blocks. What are you going to do, tell the coaches? You're a grown man.
Yeah.
You made your bed now, buddy. Like, you want to create enemies?
Oh, I'd be like, I don't really feel like dinner tonight. I'm on a strict diet. Sorry.
That's fine. And you know what? If you just say, let's go have dinner, I'm doing all this stuff, they're not going to kill you. And they're going to be good with it. It's just a function. They're like, Peyton Manning did this. Tom Brady's done that. You picked Lamar Jackson. All of them have done it. Everybody, the greatest players. Lawrence Taylor. They all do it. And it's all good.
Gosh, Sean Merriman just told a story on a podcast. I saw the clips about how, like, he went to, like, the owner of the restaurant. He's like, you don't understand. I can't pay this. It's just...
I just don't have it.
We probably hadn't gotten paid. That's the thing. A lot of people want to do it before the season. Well, now the deals all get done. Sometimes those used to drag into camp. And so you may not have gotten paid yet. I had to pay for Anthony Spencer's. He had to try. He tried to put... That was the first... purchase he tried to put on his credit card for $10,000, and they declined it. And I'm like, is this for real? And I would have been drafted the year before.
Yeah, so you would have been like the sophomore.
Yeah, so I was like, I got you. Just get me a check tomorrow.
AR, you know what I find interesting about TLC is he said a few times since we've met him, I don't like conflict or confrontation. But then he drops lines like, I'm here to replace you, coming from the same man that says he doesn't like conflict or confrontation.
Well, I also don't like just being used. So I would try to avoid it. I would just be like, hey, if someone said, hey, you want to go out to dinner? I'd be like, I know what they're about to do to me. I'd just be like, no, man, I can't tonight.
It's not like it's a surprise. They put it all together, and you're basically... It's your initiation fee to gain the knowledge that they have. You think you know it all when you get to the league. There's a reason why you watch guys get a lot better, because they start listening to people, they watch other guys, and they'll help you if they think that you're worth it. But if you're some young guy who comes in that has all the answers, all right, Rook, you figure it out yourself.
So because we've seen this before where the rookie hazing haircuts has been going on for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
But yours was a prank?
It was. They did it to the O-linemen. And the DBs, they're like, dude, we're just going to mess with these guys. And they went
in
there.
I remember, what's his name?
Pat McQuiston, who I played with. They did like the McQuiston's skullet.
Oh, yeah. Was a mullet with just the skull.
Yeah, it was the skullet. Dude, they the shaved skullet, the top right. And it had all hanging off the back.
It was almost as good as Tebow's when they did it in Denver.
Yes, except he had long red hair, so
he did like
better.
It was
like a Friar Tuck.
Friar Tuck. They gave him the Friar Tuck.
It looked great. I mean, it's very appropriate.
One
very
tuck,
fitting.
One no tuck.
By the way, too.
All right.
We're talking about the run, and you know, when you're sitting there on the bench as a passive observer, you're getting paid to do that. Have we ever thought about dangerous? They're hunting Harden. Maybe they should get him dangerous game style, Rothman, and really hunt him. Get him out there, see what it's really like.
You haven't finished Apex, have you?
No.
Someone else recommended that to me, and I'm going to watch it this weekend. They said it was really good.
I didn't get to that, but I told AR the other day I did Casino.
Mm.
and No Country for Old Men.
Those are both good.
Very good. Yeah. No Country for Old Men from beginning to end is very suspenseful because he's one of the great
But I told
villains.
AR the ending I didn't love because we don't see how he dies.
Yeah.
It's just he's in his motel room.
Yeah, but you see bodies everywhere. You see
I just think we needed that payoff. After how good that wild ride was, seeing him go out and get clipped would have been, I think, good to see.
What
That's
if
all
you
That's
just earlier. Heard the yeah. dogs in the background.
Was this
and
Ramsey
you kind of knew where it was going. You could imagine it.
Yeah.
The imagery, Roth.
I mean, so movie. I just looked this up for you, Maddie, because I wanted to know what they said. So the hero's death is completely hidden from the audience to highlight the cruel, senseless nature of fate in a lawless world.
There you go.
There's some poetic license to it.
I mean, we saw a guy get his head squished in the movie, though. No, that was Casino.
No, that was Casino.
That was Casino.
I'm going to tell you what. I watched a head get squished in The Boys while there was some fornication going on at the same time. There's a lot of things.
I don't think AR, like knowing AR now the way that we know him, he doesn't love the blood and the gore.
I think he would.
And all that.
He would love to hate Homelander, though.
He would. He would really would. I think you would be entertained by the show.
Yes.
I just don't know if you would love.
I'm strangely drawn to suspenseful films. Like I am, but if it gets into, and I'll watch all of the zombie, like the gore of zombie movies I'll watch, like. Maybe it matters that I don't even know why I'm wired that way, but if I know going in that it's a zombie movie, then I know what I'm going to see, you know, but those suspenseful movies where there's like these one-off horrendous deaths, I'm not into.
This is a superhero show that in episode one of the series is just right away. Just
a Game of Thrones.
Just a tone setter to say the least.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. It is a good show. It's crazy.
Want to get into this 2014 playoff with you and whether it's good for college football and whether or not this is going to happen or should happen. But the real reason I want to do, we'll do it next, is how it affects Ohio State. Because Ryan Day is kind of, and he has to, he probably has to play kind of both sides of this a little bit. Like be on board, but not necessarily endorse it completely. We'll talk to Bobby about that next. Rothman and Ice and the Fan.
If you consider yourself a Buckeye fan, you've come to the right place. This is your heritage sports talker and home of Ohio State Athletics. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
I have a buddy who's in.
The Fan is headed to the Memorial. Are you ready for 30 hours of live coverage? Oh, it's true, baby.
Sponsored by the Waterworks and Header Plumbing, Drain, Heating, and Cooling. TheWaterworks.com.
The best Memorial coverage. The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Scattered showers and storms on and off throughout the day today. Otherwise, mostly cloudy and breezy with temperatures getting into the upper 60s to low 70s. For tonight, we turn mostly cloudy overnight and breezy with lows in the upper 40s. And then Thursday is my pick of the week with mostly sunny skies, breezy winds, and highs in the low 70s. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
1, 2, 3. Here in The Fan, it's always football o'clock. Proud to be your home of the Buckeyes, Browns, and all the NFL games you can handle. The Fan. Rockman and Ice present Pre-Snap Reads.
Sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Dr. Mark Levy today at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP.
Bob, you've been a big advocate over the years that bigger is always better. But I'm curious if you believe that with college football.
I don't. And Josh and Maddie were having an interesting discussion yesterday where it's like these networks are ponying up all this cash, but they're ponying that up for Ohio State, Oregon, and you know Michigan, USC, Bama, Georgia. They're not really ponying it up for Purdue and Minnesota, for Vanderbilt, South Carolina. Mississippi State, I don't know, pick some other random SEC school. And so the question becomes is, the playoff was big because the teams that were in it are big and they're viewed to be important games. So I look at it like this. I enjoy a multitude of sports. I've probably watched in total 40 minutes of NBA games prior to the last round. And I watched the Cavs 5, 6, and 7. And then I watched both conference finals the other night. Because you know why? it's good teams with games of consequence. Not stuff that I don't really care about, or it's not a team that I have a rooted interest in, or I think that they're really, really good, a team that could win it. And so that's how I kind of view the college football playoff. When you're getting four, I mean, everybody in there, in theory, has a shot. 12, it's like, okay, there's some. And you look at the ratings for the JMU and Tulane, they were not great. And so if you're telling me that we're going to get a Vanderbilt-Minnesota matchup, that that's just going to really bring the folks in, like, I don't think that's going to be the case. Or if you get a team sitting there at 9 that's playing 24 and it's 42-7 at half. So, like, because you're not getting the teams that people perceive to be the best at the back end. And that's why, like, early in the NBA, like, I don't know if anybody really watches some of the early rounds unless you're heavily invested in that team. Whereas in the NFL, it's like, all right, boom, one round, boom, two. Like, we're there now.
There's a reason why some of those playoff games in the NBA are on NBA TV. Like, even the NBA knows some of these games are not going to move the needle the way we want them to, and we'll put some of the better players and better opponents and all that stuff on ABC and ESPN. So you're absolutely right.
Is there, and I agree with you, I said to Maddie before he came in, there are like four reasons people would watch. They either went to those schools and have emotional attachment, or they're betting on it, or you're scouting them because you may play them next.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I don't think people would be that drawn to it. But let me ask you this. Do you think that maybe the payoff for the fans would be that you could get some bigger non-conference games?
That's in theory.
In theory.
But let's see it happen. You know, like, if that Ohio State-Georgia series doesn't happen, then this is all.
Because they've been canceling them left and right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Ohio State-Bama is still playing, which is a surprise. And so Ohio State in this, they're the one team, I think they would have been in it in the last 25 years. They would have been it, they said, every year but two. So 2011, Fickell's year, and then 2004, which the irony of that, is we were actually 24th at the end of the season, so we may have got auto-bidded by one of the G5 teams or whatever the hell. I mean, that's remarkable.
If I'm Ohio State, if I'm Georgia, if I'm those teams that are at the top of the sport right now and this thing gets expanded, I'm not scheduling more of those games in the regular season. Why would I? I'm kind of in that mindset already because I think some certain programs like Ohio State will get the benefit of the doubt because of the talent that they know they have and just respecting that brand. And so I don't want to hurt myself by possibly getting clipped by better teams along the way. So I would actually go the other way with my schedule.
I guess it comes down to, because you're not wrong, so you don't have to prove anything at that point. Like, if Ohio State goes 11-1,
they're in.
No matter who they're playing, they're getting in. They're getting in a 12 team, especially in a might get in a 4 team. But I guess the question becomes then, do we shift like our thought process about what that new paradigm looks like to more like what Tom Izzo does at Michigan State? Yeah. Play some tough games in the non-conference, get beat up a little bit. Maybe we lose one, but we find out who we are and we need to get better. But that's putting the onus on the coaches now and to understand that. And
until you lose four of those.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
if you lose four of those, then maybe you're not deserving at that point. Maybe you could just
if I play Team X that's really good, you know, then that should be, quote, a good loss or whatever.
I'm with Bob on, because I talk about, like, if Ohio State loses to Texas this year, it may not be the worst thing that ever happened. They may be stronger for it eventually. Protecting that goose egg all year and never feeling like, I'm not saying they'll never face adversity. Facing adversity in the fourth quarter and coming out with a victory is great too, but there's a lot to be said for how hard it is, and Bob would know this, to go undefeated in a season. And I am into kind of exploiting your weaknesses and playing a tough schedule, but you're right, to a point. I just feel like that, in theory, Bob, that's what they think could happen, is you could get better games.
But I'm hoping that, like, with that, there's got to be a commitment to it.
Yeah.
And not a situation of, well, rolling out Maddie's ex. These things happen.
Well,
why'd
also
you cancel the game?
If I'm paying,
y'all, I apologize. Feel really bad, but it is what it is, y'all. Again, I do apologize, but what can I do? We never plan for these things.
This is Tony Petitti.
But they happen, and sorry, I do apologize. Look, you just have to learn from it. And, like, I apologize. I do.
You know what I love now is that he knows when you're in that you're probably going to call for it, because he's got so many drops. He's got so many tabs he has to go through. So when he plays one right away, I know he's on it. So he's looking for that now.
How about this? You know, with Tony Petitti basically dropping the Game of Thrones Cersei when you play, you either win or you die. When you die. Saying either we'll do it now or we'll do it in 28. Like, I mean,
this is happening regardless.
But it's good. Well, okay, it's happening, but it may not happen to 24. It may go to 16, and then, I mean, we've seen these Power Four home and homes getting canceled. You know, since last year,
or maybe
when they're when the league moved the nine game league schedule,
well, who,
they were canceling.
Yeah, well, and the SEC just moved to the 9-game, and they were able to twist some arms in this. I mean,
here's the only way to do it. The only way to do it is to bring back. This is the committee is to bring back the who you played and how you played has to matter.
Yeah,
like that, and I think you would agree with that. Like, I heard Bake talking about this the other day about he hates when they compare like good losses. Well. Okay, let's speak in reality. There are such things as good losses. Yeah. Because, like you said, Maddie, if you could set up 12 cupcakes, then how do I know how good you really are? And so if there is, if you play a tough schedule, you should get some benefit for that.
Playing teams tough, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not saying we're all day long, we're just going to talk about how great your losses were, you know, but...
And man. I only think there's a handful of programs around the sport that would get the benefit of the doubt in my scenario. I think, to your guys' point, if you're other programs, you got to go out and prove who you are and go toe-to-toe with some of these elite programs around college
Notre
football.
Dame had that problem, right? They played two tough games. They lost them both. And it was like, now what do we do? That's,
and they were good. And those teams both made the playoff, both looked good. And the irony is one of them sniped them by slinking around and... Mm-hmm. And getting in there. But you look last year, Indiana boat raced Illinois. Indiana played Iowa, and it was a heck of a tight ball game. Like, there's a reason why we have humans that are supposed to look at that and not just say, well, this is a loss, this is a loss. Those aren't created equal based upon how you played. So that's the stuff that you would have to input into this.
You played on great teams. They didn't have blowouts every time. No. You had to escape some games.
Yeah. It's okay. Winning. Don't apologize for winning and understand that there's competitive games between two teams. Like, I don't think if Penn State would have just lost to Oregon like that last year and maybe dropped another, it's like, all right, you lost to a team that's a playoff caliber team that's really good. And overtime, like, that matters.
We were having a conversation on Monday, I believe, about how maybe this expansion could have an impact on rivalry games and whether or not coaches would look at certain scenarios.
Yeah, that's gross.
Yeah, I'm not a fan either. Like, AR and I, we didn't love that. Like, I don't think that'd be great. We can't ignore history and how real these traditions are.
And that was
just
the argument.
Of the playoff.
Like, Ryan has kind of floated it. I mean, Ohio State, Michigan at the end of the season has been tremendous. Is it more impactful if it's week five? If both teams are going in there, maybe if you're undefeated or whatever, but let's say one team's 9-2 and the other team's 11-1. And, as you roll into, or 10-1 or something. And one team can't win the league, the other team can. And you're like, all right, well, we're both getting in. We both probably have top 8 seeds. Like, do you really play to win that? Or if you've got guys that are banged up, do you rest them?
Right.
Again, I don't want to live in a world where that's the case. I don't think that there will be. But it would be naive to think that it won't cross people's minds at some point.
It would allow you the luxury to manage the roster the way you see fit. But if you're selling that, when you say... This is why guys come to Ohio State to play in these types of games on one hand, and then the other hand you say we have the luxury of resting them.
You also got to remember, these guys are 18 to 22. They're not 35 years old rolling
out
there.
It's more risking injury versus resting. Like, just risking. Like, why do I... Like, why, they could play, but every one of those guys, I can't imagine if you were in this era, Bob, and Tress had that luxury... And that rivalry.
That luxury.
Yeah, you have the luxury of not knowing what I know. Well, Santiago's death is tragic, saved lives. All right, you would never sit that game.
No.
No one would, nor would he ask you to.
You had JT Barrett, who got his knee scoped on Sunday night and came back and played in that game the next week. Like, that's what that means.
All right, give me your quick answer to this. People think the Cavs are psyched out now. They're cooked. As a professional athlete, as a former one, I said earlier, like, the big motivation is, are we really that fragile that we've got people saying that we can't compartmentalize this? I'm not saying it's easy or you're happy, but I would use it as motivation to prove everyone that we aren't that fragile.
So I'll keep this quick because I got in this discussion / argument with Thidoff about this morning. That's the difference between being a professional athlete and someone that's in college. Is you're paid to compartmentalize things. You watch it, you learn from it, you pack it up, and you move on. And they did this study, the best, the top 10 tennis players in the world. It's not that they hit that many better shots. It's after they hit a shot, did they believe in the next 10 seconds, whether it's good or bad, they're hitting another good one.
Yeah.
And so you bury it. You know you played it. To me, I said, all it proves is you didn't even play that great. And you still had a 20-point lead, and you gave it away.
I said the exact same thing in the first half-hour show. I said, for the same reason you think they're cooked, I could say I don't think they are because they blew a big lead. The fact is they had a big lead. They got a big lead. It wasn't luck.
It wasn't like James Harden shot the lights out. They played good, but it wasn't like they played tremendous.
Yeah. All right, my man. Good to see you.
Always.
It's our guy, Bobby Carpenter. We come back in 2 minutes. And has the curtain been pulled on the great and powerful O's? Rothman.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door Showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Anthony's tennis shorts were so tight, they had to pixelate his crotch. You're listening to Rothman and Ice.
All right, I'm more than willing to have this conversation. Ironically, I really am. All I've ever said was that I find it very entertaining. And number two, I would bow back on that everybody's in on it. I've never said that there's a crazy power there that I can't describe. I also think that if O's the Mentalist was more like Blaine and a little dark and a little odd,
a little weird, maybe?
I think actually it would do him better.
Okay.
I think he's so telegenic. He's very good on the air. He's got a good personality. He can speak on his feet. And to your point, he's always bad at 1,000, which I think there are levels of this. I think that sometimes he does too much. I'm here to tell you that I never really thought that David Copperfield would make the Statue of Liberty disappear. Like, I realize it's an illusion. Like, I'm not telling you he actually did it. One thing I'm telling you is that I don't really care to know the truth. Like, sometimes I want to know how a card trick is done, but there's some things I'm like, don't dig into. It's okay. It's cool to say and be wowed. And O's has wowed people for a lot of years. And he's done stuff at such a deep level that it makes you wonder, to your point, of you couldn't do it unless everybody was in on it, unless everybody's lying. And my whole contention was that in this world, somebody's going to leak it. Somebody's going to do it to either bring him down or expose something that he's portraying as how he reads people. The difference between O's and a magician is that O's doesn't come out and say, I got a great trick to show you. He doesn't call it a trick. He actually tells you he's reading people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people would say, and that's where I think maybe he has set himself up for this kind of stuff. The people to find out are using a magic grease board or is, you know, or whatever. These people been talked to beforehand.
Yeah.
But I'm here to tell you, I'm very entertained by it. And the fact we've gone this long without it being exposed told me that everybody isn't in on it, that maybe some part of this is orchestrated, or I don't know, is he wearing a secret earpiece, or is there something going on with that grease board he writes on that magically can come up with what people have done? But you guys told me while I was gone yesterday, and I've seen this stuff on YouTube, and I don't even go near it. I'm like, I want to keep being entertained. But you're saying the run is done?
So what has happened? See, what happened was your old buddy, Pablo Torre, who used to work at ESPN. I don't know exactly what he's doing now. I believe he has his own podcast. I don't know if he's working somewhere else. Has been doing some investigative journalism, if you will, over the last few years on certain topics. One of the big stories was Belichick. We talked about it, right, with his girlfriend and all that stuff. Like, Paulo Torre was relentless with how much he was digging in to that situation. I think they had, was it the ring camera footage or something like that of Belichick with his shirt off or something? Like, it was a lot going on that Pablo was digging into. And so now he's the same guy, I think maybe with someone else, that is looking into your boy O's. And so while you were out yesterday, people were tweeting at me and TLC and letting us know that we need to tap into this and see what he has to say. I have not heard this yet. I told TLC we have to wait until AR is back because this is your boy.
This is not my guy. I've been calling BS on this now for a while. I don't know what this is, AR. We're going to find out together. So, TLC, what do you have chefed up here when it comes to O's the Mentalist and this investigation?
All right, here's what you need to know. This interview, we'll play a few things. We'll play the one where O's went on Bussin' with the Boys. I believe this would have been somewhere in between 2023 and 2024, if I'm checking the timelines right. This would have been, so Will Compton, who's one of the co-hosts of that show, they try to do the game of just think of an NFL player, and here's the context that you need going into it. The Jets had a defensive back named Bryce Hall, and the Jets also had a running back who is more famous named Breece Hall.
Played for the Jets last year?
Yes.
Just switched. Did you not know that? Just switched to the Buccaneers. Bryce Hall, isn't it?
Breece Hall, yeah.
Breece Hall. Is that not right?
He's on the Jets still?
I think he just traded in the last day of the Bucs. Okay, I gotta preface this because I think we have confusion here. Are you thinking of the same person? You've got one person throughout, or you just pick a new person?
I'm thinking of the cat. You just gave me one across.
I had you think it's him. He's not a cornerback.
For real. I mean, my mind's blown even though he got the... Were you being serious? You thought I was thinking a cornerback?
I thought... Were you thinking another cornerback?
I wasn't thinking corner. I was always thinking running back.
You
but
were,
the fact
right?
that you landed on... Breece Hall, mistyped and put Breece Hall first in my search bar and then landed on Breece Hall. And I told JP, I was like, I switched my player. I don't think he's going to get it right.
So he was told to think of a player and he tried Breece Hall, but I guess somewhere along the way he was told, and we can play this other audio here explaining it. So this is Steve Baskin, who I guess is like the most world-renowned skeptic of O's the Mentalist, because he has some five-hour expose YouTube video.
Oh, I love that. I got to watch that tonight.
I know. But, okay, so this is now Steve Baskin with Pablo Torre talking about the Will Compton clip of like, wait a minute, Will Compton was thinking Breece Hall. What is this? He was thinking about Breece Hall. He typed Breece Hall into his phone. How would O's know about Breece Hall when Will was thinking of Breece Hall? And it's like, they're so similar. And Breece Hall didn't get traded to the Buccaneers. So like, what's he talking about? So here is, I guess, the number one hater of O's the Mentalist trying to explain this.
To give you the full peek behind the curtain is that he's interacted with Will before the show. He's using that pre-show dual reality meta deception. And he has gotten Will to enter into a Google search the name of the player that he's thinking of. And he disguises, rather than just saying, hey, I want you to pull up Google and type something in, he gives him the excuse of, hey, can you look up a stat about this guy? I want you to like maybe look up some sort of stat about him. And then he Googles that stat. He thinks he's looking up a stat, but in actuality, O's has a few different methods that we can talk about of getting him to use a fake Google page, something that looks like Google. It will send you to a genuine Google results page, but in that process, the information that you enter is going to be sent to O's phone. The beautiful irony that unfolds here is that the name that Will puts into this Google search, he misspells it. O's guesses Breece Hall because that's the name that Will has typed into the Google search. The problem is that Will was actually thinking of Breece Hall. So exactly what happens is this. O's loads up Will's phone, leads him to this sort of fake Google page, tells him to look up the stat. He types in Breece Hall by mistake, autocorrect coming in for the win. It then sends him to a genuine Google results page for Breece Hall. And he says, oh, damn, I've got to actually search Breece Hall. Backspaces his answer, puts in Breece Hall, does it again. However, the way that the app works is once you set in that first kind of search query, it breaks free, right? That's the information that is harvested. And then it just sends you to a genuine Google result. And then the beauty, of course, is that, you know, mentalism in terms of body language analysis and nonverbal cues, that's not real at all. In that moment, suddenly O's knows exactly what's happened.
Would anybody like to play defense attorney?
Not me. I support all of what I just heard.
Fine. The trick has been unveiled.
He's done it.
He probably has some magic grease boards that when he hands everybody, hey, write down a name, and maybe that somehow, when you write it on a grease board, if you're asking me to think of a player, and you hand me a grease board and I write down, hold it close to my chest, don't let anybody see it, Anthony. And I write down Fran Tarkenton.
And somehow when I write it, it does some Jeopardy podium thing where it transfers to his grease board. Somehow. Have I heard this? Yeah, I get it. Like I said, I didn't worry about how David Copperfield made the Statue of Liberty disappear. I knew it was a trick. I kind of know that this is impossible to be this right all the time at these levels, these depth levels.
That's
finding out somebody's nickname when they were 4 years old or their high school girlfriend's name or what. Like, I understand it. Or when he was at Notre Dame and he had all the guys throw passes to each other and all the jerseys added up to the serial number on the dollar bill that was in the guy's pocket. And the letters on the dollar bill said ND also. And then if you turn it upside down, all the jersey numbers, it spells Go Irish. Like, I understand the levels of depth that you couldn't be that good. I understand at ESPN when he did the name any player and they all named a player and the first letters of all the names spelled get up on get up. Like, I've always said to him, you're doing too much.
But you loved the too much.
But I loved
it. You did love the too much.
I loved it because I never believed that everybody was in on it. So if this proves one thing and one thing only, that maybe it's a trick versus that everyone is lying to us.
My thing has been, it's never been everyone that's been in on it. I just think it needed to be the handful of people that he was going to talk to.
But apparently they may not be.
It was the people on set somewhere. Maybe it was a couple of the players that he knew that he was going to be talking to for a team setting or the situation that we just caught him in or they caught him in with the whole situation with Will Compton. So it's kind of what I thought it always was.
But not really, though, because it isn't that all these people that are in there doing it, that he's performing for, that are with him, didn't know or aren't in on it. Technology, which is what they were saying, that he typed it into a Google page that transferred to Oz's.
So he's the Connor Stallions of magic.
I mean,
that's what he is. He's got
the answers
already.
He's not wearing a fake mustache and sunglasses. Well, do you believe that anybody chops a woman in half on stage? It doesn't happen. They don't put her back together again.
No, but
I've
always said I don't think there are humans walking this planet that have that type of skill set. I just don't buy it. And so the fact that he's probably made hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe even millions, doing this,
all right,
to me is just wrong. That's okay. All.
The whole thing about spelling get up and all that, yeah, there's obviously some magic involved with that. But did you believe that he had a unique power to read minds more than the average human being?
Probably at some point I felt he had a little more of a knack, but I knew that the levels he was going to were almost impossible. That's all. I think he should have almost brought it down
a
level.
Missed a few shots.
Not even missed
a
few. Because he's magical at pivoting. And I remember coming to you guys during March Madness and say, well, I know that everyone's not in on it. Because I know Clark Kellogg's not lying. I just know it. And I brought that to the show that day.
White lie. Maybe it was.
No, I don't.
Should play that for Shefty. Hey, how does your father-in-law feel that he was a part of the act?
How does he feel to be used as a flunky?
We got to pour one out for your boy today. This is it. This
is
the end.
It was a great run.
We're pouring one out today for Oz the Mentalist. Pablo Torre ain't messing around. He ain't messing around. Well, actually, who was the other guy?
That
was
Steve Baskin.
Steve, that's who I need to give credit.
He has a 5 hour and 11 minute video on YouTube dedicated to exposing
every illusionist magician that ever walked the earth and call them frauds and expose them.
Yes. You're a fraud for doing magic at birthday parties.
And then ruin all the entertainment value?
Yes.
That's horrible. I don't want to live in that world. Rothman and Ice and the Fan.
Big Voice Guy here to remind you that you're listening to The Fan, Ohio's sports destination. Okay, thanks. I have 3 more seconds. Bye-bye.
Clear outcome.
Tita Green with Skip Mossick.
Saturday, we'll talk technology with Rod Cook from Titleist, plus Ohio State coach Lisa Strom, whose Buckeyes are in the NCAAs this weekend at La Costa.
Tita Green with Skip Mossick, Saturday mornings at 9 on The Fan.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
Tell the truth with Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by McDaniel GM Superstore. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
He's got a tweet. I feel for my guy AR while listening to this segment.
I kind of feel bad for you,
you
too.
You guys don't have to. I said I was more than willing to have this conversation.
I know, but he's your guy.
Oh, but you could hear a little bit of the panic in O's voice with the Will Compton clip that he played. Like, you could tell that it got him off track.
He's not a sports maven. Like, he's not a guy that, so whenever that transfer, that spell check, or he typed in Breece Hall.
And it said Bryce Hall or whatever.
He was trying to type Breece, and he typed Bryce. And it just so happens the Jets had a Breece Hall and Bryce Hall.
There's no way that O's would pronounce. I guess he could say, well, I saw it.
No, because he put up the whole, like, he just got traded to the Buccaneers. Bryce Hall did, but Breece didn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he saw it on his board come up that way. And, listen, eventually you dance too close to the sun on the wings of pastrami, and you're going to get burned. And I think it's been a heck of a run. Now, does this mean that corporations won't hire him for private events at multiple thousands of dollars?
I'm about to say, tell the truth. What do you think his price is now?
I think people still like to be fascinated. Do I think that...
Well, his price was $150 because I emailed his representation to get them on the show.
And that's $150,000.
Knowing full well we weren't going to pay that price, but just to,
I've seen,
you know,
David
shop
Blaine
around.
Have a Harrison Ford cut open an orange, and the card that he picked is in there somehow. And, like,
but I think
everybody
that
knows it's a trick, and nobody really knows how he does it.
Yeah.
This does expose it. So, like I said earlier, he doesn't come out and claim he's a magician. That hurts you. Because you are claiming, and that's why Paolo Torre does this, because they feel like he's misrepresenting his talent. Mm-hmm. A magician is a magician. There's a trick involved. And they're very good at, like, there are people that are very good at sleight of hand.
All right, fine. So he's O's the illusionist.
Okay. Honestly, that would go a little further for him.
I don't think people are...
O's the magician.
I think the...
Demoted.
I don't think he can charge as much anymore. I really don't.
You can charge what someone's willing to pay. And I do think there are some private...
But his rate out of the gate, like, you call his agent or whatever it is...
Do you think this is going to turn into mainstream stuff? You think somebody that's a corporation that's willing to hire him for a private party sees this story and says, we got to pass now.
I don't think this is helping him. I don't think it's helping him. I'll say
that. You know, we'll find out, because he usually every year does some training camp or some NFL.
He's bouncing around
and
everywhere.
Maybe he has had his run. Mm-hmm. Or he changed... Like you say, Matt, he goes back to the lab and starts working on some new stuff.
Okay. Well, he's going to have to, because we know how he does his tricks now. In fact, here's Paolo Torre also saying that other magicians do not respect him.
The thing about the magicians that I have been talking about, that I've been polling, I know a couple of them here in New York City. Some of them are so protective of other magicians, right? Like, we shouldn't reveal tricks. That is, in fact, something that is so anathema to the premise of creating things that are special for an audience and magical for an audience. And the fascinating thing about O's is that I would bring him up knowing that they had this prior position, and they say, "F that guy, there's something else going on here." And
give me a break.
I have been spending so much time trying to understand, like, what is the argument, not only for why O's is not what he says he is, but why is it a problem?
By the way, in there was a anathema, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Fire the siren for him on that. Anathema.
Anathema. I don't even...
Something or someone that is intensely disliked. That's what that word means.
So, like, it sounds like enemy. Enemy, anathema.
AR, he's got a lot of ops out here.
I'm not denying...
A lot of the magicians not happy with your boy.
They shouldn't be happy with Pablo. Not him. You're the one that exposed him. He was doing fine without you. Just like I don't believe that David Blaine held his breath underwater for 17 minutes. Like, I don't think that's possible. Or whatever he did.
Yeah, really. Like,
Houdini and all these people that did this stuff where you put him in a safe and drop him in a river. Like,
I halfway believe David Blaine, because he tried that twice, and the first time he almost died.
Weird and odd. You don't think that's part of the act?
the almost dying part?
I didn't until now.
It would be a lot less effective if everything just went fine.
You know what?
You need that suspense and that fear.
Oh, my God.
You know what I want Pablo
to... Go watch Now You See Me and all the whole stuff. You'll see.
You know what I want Pablo to investigate now? Is the guy that was climbing that building. Something's going on there. What was that?
Cables that he's hooked
Something's
up to?
Going on there.
I think that's more likely than David Blaine trying to pull some magic from the bottom of a tank.
We got to go. There's Tell the Truth for today. Common Man and Timmy coming up next.
Baker Mayfield fresh off a bender. It's just Bo Bishop. Bishop and Friends.
Weekdays from 9 to noon.
The